Okay.
I when you're okay, I'm gonna move this up to the screen.
Hi.
There she is.
I think I heard Miriam.
I'm here.
Okay, and we're on channel 20.
Okay, very good. So just about 6 o'clock. My volume, by the way. Are we good to go? Getting a little feedback there.
Yes. There's not a microphone on this. John didn't think about that. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. That would be John.
Okay. For those on the line, we will hold for just a moment. Wendy, we'll go ahead and go on your cue, by the way.
As soon as John tells me it's good.
Okay.
Should be live and ready to go.
Okay, then you're good.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and virtually call to order this meeting of the Grover Beach City Council for Monday, April 20th. It is 6 p.m. and we are virtual this evening. We'll consider that the call to order. And then I do want to make a quick note that in compliance with the state and county shelter at home orders, our meetings are being held by teleconference until further notice. This meeting can be viewed on Channel 20 and is available on live stream on the city's website and at www.slow-span.org. Additionally, members of the public may provide public comments during the meeting by calling area code 805-321-6639. And additionally, the phone line is now open. So now if you would all join me, actually, I'm going to change up just a little bit. And rather than doing a moment of silence, I'm going to do a moment of positivity for this evening. I did want to do a shout out to our community for the good work that everyone has been doing, staying safe and following the county and the local jurisdictional orders for that. And then also wanted to say thank you to city staff, and then also to those members of the community who have been making masks. And I just want to say a quick shout out to a couple friends of mine, Zandy Peters, as well as Colleen Radigan, for this very cool mask that I will not wear during the entire meeting. So, but with that, if you would, I'll just have a moment of positive reflection for the moment, please. Thank you to everyone on the line for participating in that moment of positive reflection. So now, if you would, go ahead and keep yourselves muted, and I will lead us in the flag salute. So that way we do have just, we don't have, as in past meetings where we've had everyone, everyone's microphone kind of rolling over the top of each other. So if you would, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you for that. So next, Madam City Clerk, roll call, please.
Okay, I gotta unmute myself. Councilmember Lance.
Here.
Councilmember Nichols. Councilmember Nichols? Okay, we'll come back to her. Councilmember Shaw.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Here.
Mayor Lee.
I am here as well, so let's try one more time to see if Councilmember Nichols has unmuted herself. I guess for the purposes of the record, do we know that she's on the call, just maybe not able to respond? We'll reflect that for the moment, and we do have a quorum, so we will continue. So Wendy, if John, our IT gentleman, is able to potentially work with Councilmember Nichols and see if we can get her back. But in the meantime, let's go ahead and go to our closed session announcements, which I do not see any closed session announcements this evening. So Dave, unless there's anything that we have to report from prior closed sessions that aren't there this evening?
We don't this evening.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and go to agenda review, where at this time the City Council will review the order of business to be conducted and receive requests for or make announcements regarding any changes in the order of the day. And so is there any member of the council that wants to make any changes? We'll start with Council Member Lance.
No changes. Thank you.
Very good. We'll check and see if Council Member Nichols has an opportunity to be heard. We'll go ahead towards Councilmember Shaw.
No changes.
Very good. Mayor Pro Tem Bright. Mayor Pro Tem Bright, are you able to unmute?
No changes. Thank you.
Very good. Then I'll go ahead and consider that we will proceed with the agenda as published based upon the consensus of the council, unless Mr. Hale, you have any concerns with that.
No, I don't.
Very good. Then that'll take us to our ceremonial calendar this evening. So, and I'll turn it over to our city manager for just a moment, as we do have some happy news with regards to a initiative or a community spirit that was brought forward by staff and called hashtag GB Spring Spirit. And so I'll turn it over to our city manager to introduce and then see if Ms. Petker has anything to add. It appears as if our city manager is not able to be heard at the moment, so I will kind of see if Parks and Rec Director Petker wanted to share anything about hashtag GB Spring Spirit.
Yes. Good evening, Mayor, City Council members. Thank you. Very happy that we finished off our campaign GB Spirit, hashtag GB Spirit, last week. And we would like to congratulate our winners who participated, and they submitted online pictures of themselves sharing their spirit in the community. And we had wonderful results. So if you all would like to go online at Grover Beach website and our social media sites and look at the winners. And we would like to recognize our winner, Julie Ulrey, David and Kristen Hubble, and Paula Retzma. And they will each receive a gift certificate to a local Grover Beach restaurant up to $50. And we were very happy to recognize them. And since I have the floor, Mayor, I'd like to also mention our current campaign. We have some more spirit happening in the community, and Amber, we have the GB Hug a Tree Challenge now. And this is in honor of Arbor Day as well as Earth Day this week. And this Friday is National Arbor Day. So what we would like the community to do is snap a photo of yourself hugging your favorite tree in your home and share it using the hashtag GBHugATreeChallenge. And don't forget to challenge your friends as well. And we really would like to see those pictures out on social media. So please share and keep the community spirit going. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for that update. And yes, I saw a post online of our first Hug a Tree challenge by you, and that's looked like a healthy tree. Very good. So that does conclude our ceremonial calendar, unless there's any members of the council that wanted to share anything about the challenge. So, Councilmember Lance.
Nothing to share. Thank you.
Very good. Great. Councilmember Nichols, let's see if we can hear her. We'll proceed on to Miriam Shaw, Councilmember Shaw.
No, I'm just excited and thank you for all the work you're doing to try to keep us all positive and give us a good distraction. Thank you. Trees are a great distraction right now. Thank you.
Very good. Mayor Pro Tem Bright. And I'm
thank you for your creativity. Appreciate it.
Very good. Thank you, everyone, for those comments. And so that will conclude our ceremonial calendar. And we'll say thank you to our everyone who participated, and congratulations to the winners. And I'm sure Kathy will be reaching out to them with regards to their gift certificates. Very good. So that will take us next into our public communications, where if anyone does have communications that they would like to share with the council at this time, please call in at area code 805-321-6639. And during this time, the council will allow public communications with additional communication, if necessary, allowed after the regular business items. And any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. The council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on items that are not on the agenda this evening. So let me turn it over to our City Clerk Sims and see if there are any members of the public that want to share public communications.
Go ahead and plug back to the dock, it's not gonna make a difference.
I'm not showing anyone under public communications. They all seem to be wanting to speak on an item.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and close public communications, and that will bring us back to our consent calendar, where we do have several routine items this evening that are listed in the agenda, and they are scheduled for consideration as a group. So please note that recommendations for each item are noted in parentheses, and we do have a number of roll call votes this evening, so we will do a roll call on that. Is there any member of the council that wants to pull any item for additional questions or consideration? Councilmember Lance.
No, thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Nichols. Councilmember Shaw.
Nothing to pull, thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
No, thank you.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and open this up to the public and see if there is any member of the public that has any comments on the consent agenda. And as previously, please call in at 805-321-6639. And I'll see if from our City Clerk Sims, if anyone has any comments on the consent agenda.
I believe I do have someone. Let me have Nicole put that call in.
Very good. For the member of the public who is calling in on the consent agenda, please state your name for the record, please. And then if you would identify the consent agenda item that you're looking to provide comment on.
Good evening, this is Janet Reese. I'm here for item 8 if you had any questions.
Very good. And so item 8 was the 2020 State Community Development Block Grant applications. And so is there any member of the council that may have generated any questions, realizing that Ms. Reese has joined us? Great. Thank you, Ms. Reese, for being available for those questions. It looks like we are good to go at the moment. I'll turn it back over to City Clerk Sims to see if anyone else has come online for the consent agenda public communications.
I do believe we have Jana Nichols on the line as well.
Very good. Then I'll turn it over to Ms. Nichols and allow her to have public communications.
Thank you.
Okay. Apparently, Jana was just on the line in case you guys had any questions as well for the CDBG grant.
Very good. So did the fact that Ms. Nichols is here have any generate questions by the council? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and thank both of you for being available for questions and bring it back and make sure that no additional communications, members of the public, Ms. Sims?
No.
Very good. Then we'll go ahead and bring it back to the council for consideration. Who wants to make the motion?
I'll make a motion that we accept the consent agenda as submitted.
I'll second.
Looks like we had Mayor Pro Tem Bright, and we'll go with the second with Councilmember Shaw. So just under the wire there. So very good. So we will go ahead and go with roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Yes.
Councilmember Shaw.
Yes.
Councilmember Lance.
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols and Mayor Lee.
I will be a yes as well. And so our consent agenda does pass. So which will then take us into our public hearing. And that's item number 9A and B this evening, but there is a recommendation by staff to continue this item to a date uncertain. So we'll check and see if Mr. Bronson is able to communicate with us and turn it over to him now. Looks like you are back online. I can see you, so hopefully we will be able to hear you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Sorry, I had some technical issues that were solved by our IT specialist, but I'm back with you all now. Yes, Mr. Mayor, this item is coming to you with a recommendation for extended continuance. If you recall, the council continued this item back on March 16th to allow the applicant additional time to work with the neighboring homeowner association. That work is continuing, but it's not resolved just yet. So we're recommending a continuance to a date uncertain, just to allow us more flexibility in being able to bring this item back to the council when it's ready.
Very good. Thank you for that update. And we'll look forward to seeing that come back when it is ready to return. I'll just see if there's any specific questions that members of the council have on the continuance. So we'll start with Councilmember Lance.
No questions or comments. Thank you.
Very good. So Councilmember Shaw.
No questions. Thank you.
Very good. We'll check back in with Councilmember Nichols, see if she's able to join us. Go to Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
No questions, thank you.
Very good, thank you everyone. Thank you for your work on the public hearing to kind of continue that moving forward. And so with a date uncertain, that does mean that we will need to notice that item again when it does come back, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, very good, then we will see how that progresses in the near future. So that does conclude our public hearings this evening, and it gets us to our regular business, which the first item is our Oak Park Boulevard improvements. I'll anticipate that there's a introduction by the city manager, Bronson, before he turns it over to Public Works Director, City Engineer Ray, and Police Chief Peters.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Just very briefly, what's before the council this evening is an item related to Oak Park Boulevard. We're bringing forward the final design of the South Oak Park Boulevard street repair project for approval, and we're also bringing a list of traffic, bicycle, and pedestrian improvements on North Oak Park, along with other areas of the city for your information and input this evening. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Ray, our Public Works Director.
Thank you. Hopefully you can hear me okay. If so, I'm going to share my screen so we can look at the presentation. So with any luck, this works. That's close. Let's try again.
And as Mr. Ray's screen is moving forward, I'll just will announce one more time that if anyone does have public communications on this item, please call 805-321-6639, and I will give you an opportunity to speak after Mr. Ray's presentation and questions by the council.
Bear with me for a moment.
It worked so well in the dry run earlier.
Well, we've changed it a little bit. So, here we go. So let's go slideshow. And let's see how that works. Okay, can you see it?
Not as of yet.
Oh.
Unless I'm the only one.
No.
Okay.
No, can't see it here.
Okay, hang on 1 second. And share. One last try. Aha. How about now?
We can. It is in the it is in the preview mode, I think. So we do. There you go. That looks correct.
And that should be it.
That one's a little. That there it is.
Good now.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Sorry about that. Technical difficulties there. And Matt, thank you for the introduction. This is Greg Ray, your Public Works Director and City Engineer. With me is John Peters, Chief of Police. And so just moving quickly into the staff report for some background. The City Council has identified public safety and street and other capital improvements as a major city goals for the 2021 fiscal year, along with pedestrian and bicycle safety as another council goal. On July 1st, 2019, the council provided comments and directions regarding the improvement of traffic, bicycle, and pedestrian conditions on Oak Park Boulevard. Recent South Oak Park Boulevard improvements include turning prohibitions near Manhattan Avenue, extending red curbs along sections of Manhattan and Long Branch to improve sight distance at the intersections. Our consultant, GHD, completed design for repair of the South Oak Park Boulevard from Grand Avenue to Mentone Avenue. With that design being done, this report presents the final design of South Oak Park Street Repair Project and also outlines actions to improve pedestrian and bicycle conditions citywide, including, in tonight's case, Oak Park Boulevard. So looking at the South Oak Park Boulevard Street Repair Project, on March 2nd, the initial council design was provided, to council for direction. A final design has been prepared based on council's direction and includes eliminating parking on both sides of South Oak Park Boulevard to allow the city to construct a new buffered Class 2 bike lane on South Oak Park Boulevard. This design also includes changes to the lane configuration at the north and southbound approaches to West Grand Avenue to reduce potential turning and merging conflicts. And this again is based on council consideration and discussion back in March. This aerial photograph with the arrows shows all of the potential merging and turning conflicts that exist in the area southbound and northbound just north of Grand Avenue on North Oak Park Boulevard. On the far left of your screen, you see where the two lanes tend to want to merge into one, that diversion to the right. You see vehicles attempting to make left turns in and out of Peace Lutheran Church and the Rite Aid, I believe it is, on the corner of Oak Park and Grand Avenue. You see vehicles attempting to make left turns out of several businesses in Grover on the west side of the road, crossing double yellow medians, multiple turn lanes. So these are all the conflicts that have been identified. And here's the design at West Grand Avenue that is intended to reduce those conflicts. Note that the small dots shown on the center line are actually paddle markers that will eliminate those left turn lanes crossing all of these turn lanes. And also the right turn lane will become a right turn only lane. I should say the rightmost lane southbound will become a right turn only lane. There will be a center through only lane, a second center through and left turn lane, and a dedicated left turn lane. And this should resolve some of the conflicts you're seeing there. Southbound roadway transitions from two lanes to one lane right now about near Manhattan Avenue. And this design will improve that by moving that transition from two lanes to one lane closer to the Vaughn's driveway in the commercial area where there is better visibility and a wider roadway. This will also allow for a southbound bike lane to extend to West Grand Avenue. The roadway configuration allows for two lanes to begin again just south of Manhattan Avenue. So from a single lane, as you approach Vaughn's, just southbound direction, just passing Vaughn's, and then back to two lanes again, just past Manhattan Avenue. This drawing shows that transition. There's the right turn now into Vaughn's, a dedicated right turn lane. You see the two through travel lanes with the large arrow indicating that you need to merge left if you're through traffic. And that transition takes place essentially right there at the Vaughn's driveway. You'll also note that it does show a bike lane with a buffer extending from essentially the Vaughn's driveway south. Regarding the South Oak Park Boulevard, elimination of parking, staff mailed a questionnaire to residents after the March 2nd City Council meeting about the proposed elimination of on-street parking, which would allow for construction of the bike lane. 28 flyers were mailed out. We received only 6 responses. 4 of those responses were opposed and 2 were partially in favor, essentially in favor, but also requesting that parking in certain areas be retained, or sure, you can eliminate parking, but not to create a bike lane. I would note that with this parking being eliminated, we did recently install diagonal parking on Long Branch Avenue right near South Oak Park, which increased the parking in this area considerably as an offset to other parking that has been eliminated and the proposed elimination of parking this evening. This aerial photograph shows the areas where currently vehicles park on South Oak Park Boulevard. I'll begin with the far top left of your screen. That is between Trouville and Seabright Avenues. You see a few cars parked there on a daily basis for the couple of houses that front South Oak Park Boulevard. There's been some parking just south of Manhattan Avenue on the west side. Occasional vehicles parked there, but not many. And then you see really the bulk of vehicles parked on the east side of the road near the apartment complex across from the intersection with Long Branch Avenue. In this diagram, you also see an arrow pointing to where the new diagonal parking is located on Long Branch and an area where parking was already eliminated on the west side of South Oak Park Boulevard between Long Branch and Manhattan Avenues. This evening, staff is seeking council policy direction on the final design as presented in your staff report. The estimated cost of this project is $1.4 million. It is anticipated to be funded in the soon-to-be-adopted fiscal year 2021 budget. Staff anticipates this project could be ready to bid in July, and construction would begin in late summer. Moving on to North Oak Park Boulevard. The staff is continuing to implement council's goal of improving pedestrian and bicycle conditions citywide with street improvement projects also. So as we, for example, with the Measure K projects, as we implement the Measure K projects, we are also considering bicycle and pedestrian improvements with those projects. And the same is being considered along with this South Oak Park Boulevard project, as you've seen. The next improvements staff intends to implement are on North Oak Park Boulevard. They include a no right turn on Red at West Grand Avenue, traveling east and westbound. That would be to provide a safer pedestrian crossing at Grand Avenue, crossing over North Oak Park Boulevard. Also, potential signal timing options to increase the gap between vehicles and pedestrians in those crosswalks right there at Grand Avenue. Also, we intend to eliminate on-street parking near the intersections up and down North Oak Park Boulevard and also near Oak Park Christian Church. And that will be done by painting red curbs at the intersections to improve sight distance. This is an example of the new red curbing. Unfortunately, existing red curbing is shown in red in this drawing. It makes it a little confusing, but the new proposed red curbing is shown in both blue and yellow. And this was previously provided to council back in June, I believe. Considering additional street lights at four intersections on North Oak Park Boulevard. There's one street light at each intersection now. So this would add one at each of four intersections north of Ramona. Also looking at installation of high visibility crosswalks at the four-way controlled intersection of North Oak Park Boulevard and Saratoga Avenue. The picture at the right shows a striped high visibility crosswalk and also the flexible paddle markers that extend in the middle of the center lane and lane lines to alert vehicles to the need to stop for pedestrians. Other actions have been considered, but they are longer term in nature and depend on additional funding. That would include additional police traffic enforcement and street design options to address long-term mobility needs. Elsewhere in the city, staff is also taking actions to improve pedestrian vehicle and bicycle mobility throughout the city. That includes installing high visibility crosswalks at the controlled intersection of South Oak Park Boulevard and Mentone Avenue. We do have the Safe Routes to School grant-funded sidewalk installation project. That's on South 10th Street and Manhattan Avenue, which will be occurring in fiscal year 21. We're proposing additional street lights also on selected intersections along North 4th Street and eventually along other streets over time. And as council had heard previously and had approved relative to the designs of our other two major streets, both North 4th Street and West Grand Avenue, those projects will include bicycle and pedestrian enhancements when they come about. Looking at the fiscal impact of the items presented tonight, the South Oak Park Street Repair Project, again, was estimated at $1.4 million. It is funded in fiscal year 21 with RMRA, that's Road Maintenance and Rehabilitation Account funds, LTF, Local Transportation funds, gas tax, and general funds. The North Oak Park Boulevard improvements, estimated at $126,500, are part of the current, part of the current budget will be carried over and into fiscal year 2021 for that work. There is $100,000 for streetlights, $14,500 for additional red curbing, $12,000 for restriping near West Grand Avenue and adding the flexible paddle markers to prevent the left turns. Improvements identified in other locations amount to roughly just over $500,000. Some of that funding has been identified in the fiscal year 2021 proposed budget. And of that funding, that includes $275,000 in Safe Routes to School grant funds, as mentioned previously, for sidewalk improvements. With that, I turn it back to the council for questions and comments. Again, staff is looking for direction on the design of the South Oak Park Boulevard improvements, which include the elimination of parking and the construction of a buffered bike lane, and also for the proposed actions on North Oak Park Boulevard, including the new red curbing, the modified lane configuration on both sides of Grand Avenue. And with that, I'll turn it back over to you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Ray. We appreciate that presentation. Let's see if we have generated any council questions. So we'll start with Councilmember Lance.
Thank you. My only question at this time was just a confirmation on the no turn on red. Is that recommended at all corners of that intersection, or are we just talking about North Oak Park and Grand?
At this time, we're talking about North Oak Park and Grand, and only a prohibition on Grand Avenue, essentially protecting that crossing of Grand Avenue over North Oak Park.
Thank you.
Next, we'll go to see if Councilmember Nichols has been able to join us via voice. We'll head to Councilmember Shaw, see if there's any questions.
Yeah, I have three or four. Just to walk through the bike lane design on South Oak Park. It's my understanding the bike lane will start after the Vaughn's entrance, and until that time, is it a Sharrow?
Yes, essentially. Well, no, we have not proposed Sharrows. There would essentially be no bike lane. The bike lane ends, or doesn't begin, I should say, until past the Vaughn's driveway. Now, if you recall, there is no bike lane southbound on North Oak Park Boulevard, but there are bike lanes on West Grand Avenue, east and westbound at that location. So you would be coming from if you were, say, traveling eastbound, you would be turning right, your bike lane would be ending, and then it would begin again. I do not believe there's adequate room to extend that bike lane all the way to the corner, but we can look at that again as we complete the final design.
Yeah, I would really like to, if there's a way to narrow lanes and make the bike lane continuous, otherwise it's a dead end. So that would be my question, comment on that, and I'm sure we'll have more discussion. Just looking at the red curbing on North Oak Park, because I had looked at it before, and then I didn't have it before me this time in the packet. Is the red curbing basically most of the way down on North Oak Park? Are there significant areas where people can still park? I just couldn't quite see it as we went through the presentation.
Yeah, so the diagram is a little tough to see, but yes, there will be some parking remaining, mostly north of Ramona.
So perhaps, Mr. Ray, you could put that slide back on the screen just for visual purposes.
Let's see if that's possible.
Yeah, if you can.
Are you seeing the slideshow now?
I see the questions or comments slide.
Okay, perfect. Let me go back to the show. Let me change the display setting, and let me quickly forward through to that. And this is not the entire roadway, but it does show, for example, Newport Avenue, and you can see down almost to Ramona.
So near the intersections, there will be red curbing.
That is correct. And that is for site distance improvements.
Okay. That's what I wanted to just double check that was, because I know that's what we had talked about. Okay. I just have a couple more. We did get one letter. This is about South Oak Park, from someone who was concerned. They live at, I think they in the apartment complex at 251 South Oak Park. And their concern was, when guests and visitors come to park, if they can't park in front of the building, they will have to go across the street and go to Long Branch. And they said that crossing caused people to jaywalk. And I just wasn't sure, I wasn't visualizing it, and I wasn't sure if there was a way we could improve that crossing for people, because if we are going to take away the parking in front of the building, if, for example, maybe we shouldn't make them climb over a median to go park at Long Branch. I don't know if that's possible or to alleviate.
So it's not something that staff had considered in the current design. I would suggest that, you know, we do not improve a crosswalk at a intersection other than a four-way controlled intersection. So no, and I guess the short term is that no, we don't have plans to do that. You know, there is parking on the other side, and I understand there are no guest spaces in that apartment complex, unfortunately, but there are, I believe, two parking spaces per apartment. So
okay,
there is parking there. It's just limited.
Okay. And okay, I think those were all of my questions for now. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, that'll take us next to Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. Well, actually, Miriam asked a couple of my questions. Thank you, Miriam. So then, just checking on the safe routes to schools, the requirements that SLOCOG was looking for, you're working on those, and so that's all handled?
Yes, we're taking advantage of essentially 2 years of Safe Routes to School grant funding to pull that project together in its entirety so that we can do both segments, and that will be actually in fiscal year 21.
Terrific. Very good. And I think I'm just going to make my comment right now, if you don't mind, Mayor.
Certainly.
I agree with Miriam regarding continuing the bike lanes to West Grand Avenue. It seems kind of counterproductive to just stop right there. So if we can possibly do something so that we can finish them to the end of the street at where they connect at West Grand, I think that would be really the best solution. And then I am concerned as well about people having to cross the street if they are going to visit that apartment building. I'm concerned that we might be we're solving one problem and maybe creating another. So we may need to think about that somehow. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And Greg, perhaps for my questions, if you could bring up the intersection slide. I'll go back to a share screen, because I think my question centers around what council members Shaw and Mayor Pro Tem Bright are asking as well. So mine's going to be a visual. If we could.
Are you seeing that now? Oh, I can move. Obviously not the right slide, but you're seeing the presentation?
We are not as of yet.
Are not seeing it?
Not yet.
Okay, let me try again here.
Hmm.
How about now?
Oh, yeah.
There we go. Yes. Very good. Okay, so we'll start with this slide, and then we'll go to the one on South Oak Park as well, because I do have a question on this. So you indicated that the delineators there are going to be paddle-like, so approximately 3 feet tall, probably a couple inches wide, so that will prohibit left turns into the businesses on the south side of North Oak Park, correct?
That will prevent, that will prevent left turns into businesses between Grand Avenue and Ramona on North Oak Park Boulevard.
Okay. And so I guess the question becomes is the, and I apologize for not asking this earlier, so this left turn would effectively be for movements from North Oak Park onto Ramona only, correct?
If you were to make a left turn, the left turn lane is for a left turn onto Ramona northbound.
Okay, so the businesses on the south side of North Oak Park are going to become right in, right out for traffic going south on North Oak Park, correct?
Both directions, right in, right out. Northbound and southbound, all the businesses near Grand Avenue will be right in, right out.
Okay, so just wanted to confirm that I was seeing that correctly. So if you could go to South Oak Park and just for... my question is going to center around the two straight lanes, and so with respect to that. Okay, so here, if we recall, we've got two southbound lanes coming through the intersection, and then we have a right turn lane into Vaughn's, and then those two straight lanes go begin to merge from two lanes into one. So I know there was the question with regards to kind of a shared bike lane, and I see striping of that bulb out for what would be the start of a bike lane closer to Grand Avenue. So I guess my question becomes is, could that bike lane be put into that striped area and the merge started sooner into Vaughn's, or do we start to have potential bicycle vehicle proximity?
If I understand your question correctly, you're asking, could the bike lane, for example, begin at the corner of Grand Avenue and South Oak Park in the southbound direction prior to the driveway?
Correct. Yeah. So effectively, it would be as a bicyclist was coming eastbound on West Grand Avenue, they could make the right turn and stay within a bike lane onto South Oak Park. So
that question hadn't, of course, come up before tonight, and I know some of the other council members had mentioned a desire to see that also. And so looking at it just on the fly, I do not believe there's adequate space to do that. If you recall, to have a bike lane adjacent to a dedicated right turn lane, that bike lane would have to come out and be a lane. It would cross or merge across the right turn lane at some point, probably like they do now with the green paint on the bike lanes. And then that bike lane would be along the left-hand side of the right-hand turn lane. There is currently insufficient space to do that as I'm seeing it in this photo.
Okay. So from a, and this gets into a much larger discussion and perhaps I'll save it for another day, but I'll ask the question and see what it does to for a response. If a bicyclist is now coming east on West Grand Avenue, should we begin to make improvements? Excuse me. Should we have them turn right onto what I think would be 16th Street, and then make a left onto Long Branch and then come out on Long Branch rather than having them go through this intersection.
And if we were posting a route or further designating our bike paths and routes in the city, that might be a good idea to do. As of today, we don't have that additional level of designation for bike lanes and bike paths. That could be indicated on the city's website, perhaps, saying, you know, we recommend that you, you know, if you want to stay in a bike lane all the way or have a less traveled roadway, it would be the path that you suggest, Mayor Lee.
Okay, very good. So maybe we can have some discussion about that under our consideration. So then going back to a question that the city manager and I have discussed recently, is we have two lanes coming across Grand Avenue going straight, and then we have a lane drop after the Vons parking lot. Do you have a sense, or can you provide a anecdotal expectation of how many vehicles would be traveling south of the Vons parking lot in order to kind of allow for the capacity to go back down to one lane until further on down when we have the adequate room for two lanes?
I looked for a traffic count data for South Oak Park. I can find it for North Oak Park, but I'm not finding data. I was able to sort of derive it from some other numbers on adjacent streets. I'm just kind of doing the math of everybody who ends up at the other streets has to have come from here. It's about 3,000 vehicles less than on North Oak Park southbound. I should say both directions, about 3,000 ADT less. But do keep in mind that there is already a transition to a single lane in southbound South Oak Park. It just occurs closer to Manhattan Avenue right now. So right. It really would not be a change in traffic volume capability of the roadway as far as how it stands today.
Okay, so then from that perspective, the controls for the vehicles would be better enhanced by the pavement striping versus what's not there currently, and it would better define how the movements would take place, correct?
Yeah, you're not seeing all of the arrows and the signage that comes along with this, through traffic merge left. You see the first arrow indicating through traffic merge left. Right now, that exact thing occurs right at Manhattan Avenue, just north of, I should say, right at Long Branch Avenue. And so you'll recall maybe previously that we eliminated some parking on the west side of South Oak Park Boulevard because of that conflict. Vehicles were merging into a single lane and cars were trying to park it on the right-hand side at the same time. So this moves it further up into the commercial area where there's better visibility and more space to allow for this movement.
Okay. Gotcha. And so I think that's my questions for the moment. I understand we do have several callers on this, so I'll let Ms. Sims take control of the screen back, and as we bring up our first caller, I will go ahead and just announce one last time that we are going to open this up to members of the public. Anyone who wishes to comment on this item, please call in at 805-321-6639. So with that, City Clerk Sims.
Yes, we do have four people that are calling in on this item, and I believe, I hope this gentleman states his name when he starts to speak.
Very good, then we will go ahead and ask folks to state their name for the record, and please proceed.
My name is Dan Lanier.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us. Yep, we can hear you, Mr. Lanier. You have your time for public comment.
I live between Seabright and Trueville on Oak Park. I bought my house 3.5 years ago. I paid well over $500K for it. I use that parking daily, and I think there's other alternatives to this. I would like to see some stop signs go in, possibly street lights, as the traffic goes by too fast. I have small kids. I think there's other alternatives to this, such as the islands that are in place. You know, maybe we can utilize those islands a little better and make more space for the bike lane that you're proposing. But for me, like I said, I utilize this parking daily, and it would hurt me. I mean, and specifically, this question is for Mr. Ray, the city engineer, is you know, I got an elderly mom, and would you make your mom park around the corner as she comes to visit you every time? Because that would leave me with essentially zero parking in front of my house for any guest, any relative, any caregiver, any contractor.
And we will go ahead and capture all questions and give staff an opportunity to respond to those questions after public comment. So, but we are capturing those questions. So, did you have anything else that you wanted to share?
Also, I would like to add that this would dramatically affect the resale value of my house. It cost me a ton of money. A ton of money.
Okay, so thank you for those comments. We did capture a couple questions there. So, Ms. Sims, do we have the next public commenter, please?
Yes. And she is in.
Good evening.
Hello. Hi, yes. My name is Kathy, and I'm a renter here on Oak Park Boulevard, and bottom line, I would have to move. I do not have a garage that is large enough to accommodate two of my vehicles. So that's my only comment, that you are really cutting out, and I live in between Starbright and Long Branch. And there's some condos right there. Oh, thank you.
Thank you for those comments. You said we had four, so I think we're on number three currently.
Correct. And she is in.
Very good. Good evening.
Hello?
Good evening. Yes, we can hear you. Can you hear us? Please state your name.
Hello, is it my turn?
Yes.
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Okay. I was waiting. My name is Anna Lanier, and I live right across from Berry Gardens. So, basically, I'm not opposed to a bike lane as long as our parking is not taken away. For reasons, you know, property value and whatnot. But the biggest thing is that I have three kids, and this is, I mean, as a mother, this is like the last place I would want my kids riding on this busy street. People drive way too fast. If anything, I feel like a stop sign right here in the dip would actually slow things down a bit. But I also think the median isn't really kind of, I mean, it's just there with dead things in it. So I feel like if they took that out, there would be enough possibly for, you know, us to keep our parking and also have a safer place. The bike lane could be on a different street. I just think a boulevard is like the last place you want to take your family.
Very good. Was there anything else that you wanted to share? And we'll go ahead and go to our fourth caller. So do we have a fourth caller?
Okay. And he is in.
Hello? Very good. Good evening, sir.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, hi. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Hi, my name is Eric. I actually live on South Oak Park. I live between Seabright and Crowville. You know, I really can't lose that parking spot because I'm self-employed, so I have my work truck inside the driveway, and I leave my regular cars outside. But I can't really, you know, I don't know where else to park if I lose that parking spot. And like I said, I'm not against the bike lane. I don't know if you guys seen, but that street in Newport, they kept their parking, and they added just the bike lane over it, so they could like drive, you know, they could ride their bike and stuff. You know, like I said, if you guys can do something like that, then I'm okay with if I can keep my bike. But if I can keep my parking spot, if you guys can, like I said, I don't mind if you guys add the bike lane, but whatever you guys want to do, you know. But if you guys can extend, I mean, my opinion, if you guys can extend the island, you know, remove the island and then make the streets a little bigger, and we keep our parking, then you guys can add the bike lanes, then I think that would work for all of us, you know. I don't know, but that's my opinion.
Okay.
And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Very good. Thank you for sharing those comments.
Okay, thank you.
So is there any other public commenters on the line, Ms. Sims?
I don't, no one else has called in, but we did receive an email from Krista Jeffries.
Gotcha. And would either you or the city manager be in a position to be able to read up to 3 minutes of that statement?
I could read it, yes.
Okay.
Like I said, this is from Krista Jeffries, and she writes, I'm writing in support of the improved bike and pedestrian safety measures on Oak Park Boulevard and Grand Avenue. I walk these streets with my kids as much as we can, but this intersection is often problematic and stressful. Cars don't look for pedestrians, they go too fast, and there's no designated space for bikes. I also support the recommended improvements suggested by Jim DeSeco and Gary Chavez. Sharrows are dangerous and provide a false sense of safety to both bikers and drivers. They've been statistically connected to higher rates of bike car accidents and deaths compared to other designs. And that's it.
Okay, very good. Thank you for those comments. So I guess we'll do one last check and see if anyone has called in or emailed on this item.
Actually, it looks like Krista Jeffries is now calling in about the item. Oh, or did she just hang up? Let me check to see if Nicole is going to put her in. And here she is.
Hello.
Good evening, Ms. Jeffries. We did have your statement read into the record. So is there anything else that you wanted to add to that?
I didn't catch the last couple of comments. I was getting my kids in the bathtub, but I just wanted to call and remind the council that these improvements to the street are directly in line with all of the priorities that they determined last year and this year. We know that the status of safety on Oak Park Boulevard is not acceptable. There's been too many deaths, too many accidents. We have heard from people who are opposed to the bike lanes that the traffic moves too fast, and there's really just a lack of understanding on the part of a lot of people about how to actually improve traffic. There's a lot of counterintuitive notions that we think if we make more space for cars, then it will slow down, or if we take away space for pedestrians, then people won't walk there. And that's just not true. And I want to encourage the council to stick to priorities that they have already made. We know that it doesn't hurt property values. It actually makes them better. We know that it doesn't make kids unsafe. It actually helps protect kids. And I have young kids. I have friends who want to bike around here. I want to be able to get these kids out of my car and get them some exercise. And it's not safe to do that right now. We know that we have a latent demand to provide safe biking spaces for people who would bike if it was safer. In addition, slowing down the traffic on that road by narrowing the road would help lower the cost of paving that road over time because it's less wear and tear on the road. So economic reasons, safety reasons, bike reasons, there's a lot of reasons to do this. And yes, it might be mildly inconvenient for people to not park, but hopefully that will be a short-lived issue and there are ways around that. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. So we'll go back to Ms. Sims and see if anyone else has called in.
We do have, it looks like, two other calls that just called in. And this would be the first one.
Very good. Good evening. So thank you for calling this evening. So if you could state your name, please.
My name is Phil Schaff.
Thank you, sir. So go ahead and please provide your comments.
Okay.
Mr. Shaw, are you still with us?
I don't know why he's not. Just a moment.
Okay.
There he is. He's back.
Can you hear me now?
Mr. Shaw, thank you for joining us.
You bet. We're still trying to get a left turn lane in our parking lot at Peace Lutheran Church, and none of the maps show anything that's going to happen. And also, we'd like to have red curbing in front of Rite Aid on the Oak Park side, because sometimes vehicles and even big trucks park there, and the line of sight going in the park, coming out of the parking lot, is very limited. And as far as the delineators along there, I think we could put curbing or something in there, make it look a little more attractive than yellow paddles.
Great. Thank you for those comments. Is there anything else that you wanted to share?
No, that's what we have to talk. Well, I had to talk about. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for coming in for your comments this evening. So, Ms. Sims, you said you had one more. We think.
Yes, we do have one more gentleman that will be joining us. Okay. And okay. Okay.
Hello.
Good evening.
Can you hear me?
There you go.
Yep. Yes, please state your name. Good evening, Miss. We can hear you.
Okay. Yes. My name is Tracy Cox. I own the property at 470 South Oak Park between San Seabright and Manhattan. My family has owned this property since the early 70s when it was a dirt road with nothing else across from it. But my problem is I really think that taking away these parking places is a real hassle for the people that live here. There's nowhere for UPS to park, FedEx to park when they deliver, and they can't walk that far away from their truck. We get deliveries in the street all the time, and they stop in front of the houses on these streets. And also with this island out in front of us, it's very poorly maintained. I trimmed the trees the other day in front of us, and they are covered in scales. And I don't understand why we can't remove those and make that extra lane that we need. There's no purpose in them. That just seems silly to me.
Very good. Thank you for those comments. Was there anything else that you wanted to share?
That's really all I have to say. Is I just think it's disturbing that you would want to take away parking. I mean, there's nowhere else for people to park on the street or people that come to park on the street. And even us, we have three cars. In order to move some amount of us, you have to juggle one into the road for a while. There'd be no way to do that.
Okay. Very good. Thank you for sharing that this evening. So we'll go ahead and go back to Ms. Sims and see if anyone else has called in.
We are getting a caller right now. I'm not quite sure for what item yet. Just a moment.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, you have. It's Rachel Mann. We will put her into the call now.
Very good. Good evening, Ms. Mann. So you are up for public comment.
Hello?
Good evening.
Hello?
Good evening, Rachel. Yes, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Mary Lee. Hi, everyone. Thank you. This is Rachel Mann, and I am at Ramona and 16th. And I also want to support this improvement in bike and pedestrian infrastructure. This intersection, we all agree that Oak Park is too fast. Widening things for to make the lanes wider, I don't think is going to help. I appreciate the concerns about parking, because in our current lifestyles, we've gotten very attached to these vehicles. And I do think that we can find a solution for that. But in the long term, the more people we have biking and walking, the less cars are going to be there and the less traffic we're going to have. And I think that that's going to make for a better environment for everybody and a safer environment for everyone. So I do speak in support of these measures. I'm hopeful we can find a good compromise that works for everyone. And I appreciate the chance to call in and talk. Thank you for making sure that these meetings continue to keep happening.
Very good. Thank you for those comments. So I guess we'll turn it back to Ms. Sims and see if we've had any other callers.
No, we have not.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and close public comment on this item, bring it back to staff to address some of the questions that were raised, or see if there's other questions that were generated as council members were listening. So I think I heard Mr. Lanier and several others concerned about removing parking for residents, and perhaps you can respond to that in conjunction with some of the other comments that had to do with either reducing the width of the center medians or reducing lanes. So I realize there's several different questions kind of rolled into that, but I think you might be able to capture as much information with a response to that as possible. Is that correct?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Good. So a lot of comments there, not so much questions, but I think, you know, underlying the comments really is the question. Is eliminating the center median an option as opposed to eliminating parking? Council may recall that when we brought this forward for discussion previously, we talked about the three options essentially for developing a bike lane on South Oak Park, you know, short of widening the roadway, which is probably not a reasonable option at this time. The options were essentially to eliminate a single travel lane in each direction. So you have a one lane in each direction on South Oak Park Boulevard, to eliminate parking or to eliminate the medians. From a traffic perspective, you know, we talked earlier about the volume of traffic on South Oak Park. And while it is less than the volume of traffic on North Oak Park by, you know, most likely several thousand average annual vehicles per day, if that makes sense. While it may be several thousand lower, you know, it's still a fairly high volume street. And in your general plan, it does indicate that ultimately it would be four lanes
in both directions from end to end, South Oak Park and North Oak Park. So you have general plan policy that suggests you have four lanes. So that leaves really a study to consider reducing it to two lanes and what would the impacts of that be, which we haven't done, or eliminating parking or tearing down the center medians. My only, you know, hesitation in removing the center medians is that sort of conflicts with other improvements we've been making, in that from a complete street perspective, we are looking for to have medians with trees and landscaping. We did do some recent work in those medians to improve them from a landscaping perspective. We had plans prior to the current shelter and home order and to actually plant additional trees in those center medians. So there's, you know, one is the opportunity lost in terms of that. You know, it is your landscaping. It's the look of the road. It makes it a friendlier, more nice looking, you know, attractive community. But also there's the cost. I mean, eliminating those medians would come at a much higher cost than simply eliminating the parking and striping a bike lane. So something to consider. Beyond that, though, it is a possibility. We could eliminate the center lanes and create the bike lanes, or the center medians, rather. Jeff, you're not coming.
I think you're on mute.
I apologize for that. So I did want to turn it to either Mr. Ray or Mr. Bronson and see if there was any other specific questions beyond thanking Ms. Cox for doing some landscape maintenance in the islands for us that we needed to address.
I did not log any other questions per se, mostly just comments about you're not wanting to lose the parking spaces. I will make a comment. You know, one of the concerns is that, you know, what about the UPS truck or, you know, other delivery trucks? What about contractors working? These conditions do exist elsewhere. And when necessary, contractors can park, you know, on the side of the road for short periods of time related to, you know, deliveries, things like that. Longer periods of work, for example, if a home was being remodeled and you needed contractors there for a series of days, that could be handled through an encroachment permit. And, you know, a bit of a traffic control plan, which would have the bikes essentially routed around that area. So there are ways of making that happen. It's not quite as convenient as it is today, clearly, but there are ways to make that happen.
Okay, very good. Appreciate that. Mr. Bronson, did you want to add anything based upon comments that you heard?
I would just add the points that we're trying to thread the needle in creating complete streets in the city that are consistent with the council's goals. The council did add that to your list of goals next fiscal year as part of our streets and other capital improvements. And so we're straddling that and trying to add something, even if it has something that is taken away. And ideally you wouldn't have that, but we're trying to thread the needle and do something that ultimately can be successful all around. Certainly, as Mr. Ray mentioned, taking away the medians is an option. It's one that comes at a cost. And I will just add that right now, the project has grown in cost given the additional bike lanes, and that's a worthy expense. We are diligently working to get enough funding next fiscal year given the funding challenges that we're looking at. Adding a median removal would add some significant costs that we'd have to try to secure for this project to make it a reality. So that can be done, but it comes at a cost that we have to account for in trying to balance the competing interests in achieving this complete streets network that the council has expressed a priority to achieve.
Very good. Thank you for that context. So with that, let's go ahead and bring it back to the council for some deliberation and see if it generated any comments. So I think I'll go in a backwards order this time and start with Mayor Pro Tem Bright and see if there's any anything that you wanted to put into the discussion.
Thank you. Well, I am concerned about the lack of parking, of course. That is always a concern. But other than that, no, not really.
Okay. Very good. We'll go ahead next to Councilmember Shaw. We'll skip over her for just a moment, and perhaps she has her mic muted. So, and see if Councilmember Lamb.
Oh, sorry. All right. I'm back. Can you hear me?
Hold on. I think we have Councilmember Shaw.
Yeah. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Right. Yes, we can.
I just had a few questions to follow up after the comments. One thing that I don't know if we addressed was Phil Schaff was asking if there would be red curbing near Rite Aid. I wasn't aware of a left-hand turn lane at Peace Lutheran, but I wanted to try to respond to that because I just wasn't sure about those questions.
Thank you. You are correct. I did not capture that. So perhaps Mr. Ray, if you could address the left turn into the Peace Lutheran, and then also the red curb between Oak Park and the entrance to the Rite Aid.
So currently there is no legal left turn into Peace Lutheran. There is not sufficient space to create or to safely create a dedicated left turn, which is what that would require, into Peace Lutheran, or for that matter, into the Rite Aid. And in fact, the proposed striping plan, which includes the raised paddle markers, would fully eliminate left turns into Peace Lutheran and Rite Aid. So they would be, as you'd mentioned earlier, right in, right out to that. So to address that comment, left turns are proposed to be eliminated entirely instead of actually being facilitated by a separate lane. And then as regarding the additional red curbing requested, I don't see a problem doing that. I don't really think that there's a high demand for parking there. There's an occasional vehicle that parks in the street there. We would want to coordinate with the city of Arroyo Grande to be sure that they were comfortable with that, because as you're aware, that portion right there is actually in the city of Arroyo Grande from basically behind the sidewalk. So it would just be a coordination issue, but I think it's not that big of a deal to incorporate additional red curbing if that is the direction of the council.
Okay. Yeah, it was my understanding as well, just in talking about the left-hand turn into Rite Aid. When we had discussed this at first, I didn't know this, but that's always really been illegal. You're not supposed to make a left-hand turn over a double yellow anyway. So really, the police chief let us know that when I said, oh, I always make a left-hand turn. So I don't think that's too much of a change. I'm not sure if the red curbing near Rite Aid would change a lot. I mean, I'm open to it if it's not too much of a hindrance on people. The other question, I just had a couple follow-up questions too. In looking at South Oak Park, I know there are some bike lanes that are already there, but they're kind of faded. Would they also at least get repainted just to make the whole thing kind of more continuous?
The intent of this work would be to remain within the bounds of the project. So we didn't intend to go outside of that and refresh other striping. Short of having sufficient funding, it's something we could consider, but we would have to determine if we could fund that.
Okay. And then in the bike lanes that are contemplated, are we thinking, I can't remember if we said we were going to put green paint anywhere in these bike lanes, and would that be near the intersections, or where would that be?
Council had provided a direction to consider green paint on South Oak Park, if I recall. And so, similar to what we did on Newport, we would consider that through the intersections.
Okay. Those were, oh, So just a question, if we did talk about possibly narrowing South Oak Park down to one lane, what would a traffic, would I would assume we would need to do a traffic study on that, and like what would be a cost or timeline for that?
It would probably add several months to the project, you know, by the time we got a company out there to do the counts and got a firm on board, you know, first just to get a firm on board to actually do the study, to do the counts, to complete the study and prepare the report, you're probably looking at 3 months or so of delay in the project. And then, you know, it would be interesting. We don't know what the outcome of that study would be. It might be, in fact, that it's an unacceptable level of service, you know, in one direction or the other on South Oak Park Boulevard, you know, just based on the number of intersections and the demand for that roadway. It's something I can't answer without the study in front of me. So, you know, there could be that possible outcome would be, you know, you really can't eliminate a lane.
Okay. Are we just doing questions now or comments?
You can do comments as well.
Okay, let's see. So my comments are, you know, just being someone who lives on Newport, and we went through this where not all parking was lost, but some parking was lost, especially at the corners. But at the end of the day, it has majorly slowed the traffic. And especially during these times with everyone home, I mean, this has been the pedestrian heyday here. And it's keeping, I think, a lot of people sane. It's keeping me sane. We've been walking and biking every day. There is solid pedestrian traffic in front of my home. And I 100% agree with people who comment that this actually adds to the value of your home. And, you know, we get comments from people all the time, slow the traffic, slow the traffic. Well, the best way to slow the traffic is to narrow the travel lanes. And one of the best ways to narrow travel lanes is to increase visibility by taking all the cars out of the way and putting a bike lane. And it helps. We were all saw how upset people were when we did Newport, but the result has been, I mean, the traffic speeds, everything has been great. So I'm definitely listening to the people that are concerned about parking. I'm not ignoring that at all. I understand that. We're a vehicle. I'm not personally a vehicle loving person, but we're a vehicle loving family. Let's put it that way. And so I understand, like, people need places to park their toys. But in everything we went through with Newport, I had people come up to me that said, you know, I never supported K-14 because I only ride a bike. And I felt like my tax dollars were going down the drain. And I finally feel like I have a place here and my dollars are going somewhere. So, you know, I think we all have to keep in mind this is a public roadway. It never was a private parking lot. That's not saying I'm dismissive of those concerns, especially because that is a very, we talk about increasing housing density, and that is a densely populated area. So that's a tough one. But I think we all have to keep in mind one of the ways of solving the housing crisis in California is that people can no longer, you know, think that we're allowed to have our two garage spots and our two driveway spots and the whole roadway, because we're never going to be able to do the things that the experts are telling us we need to do to make it a more livable city. So, you know, in some ways, I'm just trying to think of the greater good. It's not just about biking. It's about controlling speeds. And it's about having complete roadways that are good for everybody, not just the people who happen to live right there. But I would be open to looking at a traffic study and trying to eliminate one of those lanes, because that's going to slow traffic and that's less roadway. And I think it would probably, as we have on Newport, leave room to have not only the parking, but possibly a protected bike lane, which was always something we really wanted in the city. and I think makes sense on such a major street. I mean, if it's really a, you know, a 3 to 5 month delay, I think it might be worth looking at. So those would be my comments. You're muted, Jeff, sorry.
Thank you, appreciate that. So next we'll go over to Councilmember Lance and see additional questions or comments.
Sure, thank you. I think a handful of comments were already made by my fellow council members, but I just wanted to say a few things. One, I would be supportive of, for continuity purposes, doing no turn on red at all points of the intersection at Grand and Oak Park. I know we're kind of focusing on Oak Park, but just kind of tagging that. I would also be in support of looking to see if there's anything we can do about the bike lane continuity from West Grand onto South Oak Park, because that is a little funky. I get the things that the elements that are coming into play there, but if it's something that can be looked at a little bit closer to see if there's anything we can do to make it all work. I will end on parking. The paddle markers on North Oak Park to further encourage or discourage, I should say, illegal turns over a double yellow. I would be curious just to hear whether there are other alternatives to those. I personally am not opposed to the idea of them, but I know a lot of people don't like the look of them. I know that curbs can be a little not as obvious. I personally have turned left over curbs, not realizing that there were curbs. So totally get that, but maybe just something to look at as far as alternatives or just discuss. And then as far as South Oak Park, I drive that street all the time because that is how I get to and from my son's preschool typically. And I will say that although it does not get as backed up during peak hours as North Oak Park, it does get backed up to an extent once you get to Mentone. I do end up turning right on Mentone, and that is where the stop sign is. So there is some backup there during peak hours. So if we were looking to do it down to one lane, I would not be surprised, again, not a traffic expert whatsoever, but I would not be surprised if it was seen as unreasonable to put it down to one lane, although that would be a way of slowing traffic for sure. I, from a parking perspective, I am more concerned about the apartment complex. I drove by this weekend and there was about 15 cars parked right in front of there. And although it is a challenge for parking for single family homes, I know that some creative things can be done. A lot of people have cars on my road, and even Alec and I park tandem to not park on the street. But I know we kind of go above and beyond probably others. I know my neighbors have 5 cars and they also get creative as well in how they park their cars in their single car driveway. So I think more of my concern goes to the amount of cars that are already parked in front of Oak Park Villages. I think that's the name of the complex there at 250 or 251 South Oak Park. Mainly because of the need to cross the street with lighting potentially being something to consider, and lack of a controlled crosswalk, lack of any crosswalk. I just think we should maybe look at that a little bit more, because I think it could be, you know, a challenge to take away that parking and then have people crossing, at that area. I would be interested in knowing, and I know that this may not be available right in front of us, but knowing what the cost impact would be for reworking the medians. I know the medians, they kind of have different formations. It's not just, you know, kind of a narrow median all the way down straight. It kind of widens at points and narrows at points. So I wonder whether it's possible, or maybe we can minimize construction costs in keeping part of the median but narrowing it, so it's, you know, one kind of slim median all the way down. Again, not an aesthetic landscape designer by any means, but just kind of some things to think about if that would get us to a place where we can have some parking and bike lanes. In addition to, and I don't know what the current travel lane distance is right now, but whether there's any opportunity to narrow that as well to create a little bit more space. Those are my comments on that. And I think that's all I have. I know that was kind of all combobulated into one big mush, but hopefully that was captured.
It was good mush. So with that, we'll see if Councilmember Nichols is able to join us via voice.
She's online. I believe she needs to unmute.
Okay, so
can we unmute her for her? Because I think you can once you look at participants. Maybe not. I'm not sure.
Well, we're trying to determine that. Maybe let me make some comments. And I've always struggled with South Oak Park in my engineering brain and in my kind of participation brain. Does it want to be two lanes in both directions? Does it want to be parking and bike lanes, or just parking or just bike lanes, and that complete street style of design? And the conversation that or the comment that Mr. Ray was making with regards to the general plan showing it being a two-lane road, I know general plans are intended as planning documents and so forth, but I recall a League of California Cities discussion where it was someone was indicating that we wouldn't be driving cars in 25 years. And so I'm starting to kind of have that conversation of what a general plan says versus what the reality of the needs of the driving public versus the current parking public, and trying to kind of balance the priority that we as a council have set with bike lanes and complete streets. And so and the conversations I've had with the city manager about trying to get two lanes the entire way, part of me with the discussion this evening is now going, okay, do we go in a different direction? And it kind of goes towards what Councilmember Shaw was saying, is do we take a pause here, realizing that we may be missing an opportunity to complete this street within the next 5 or 6 months? But do we take a pause and really decide how we determine what the capacity of that street needs to be, with the maintaining of minimal parking for those that need that, whether it be for the deliveries, but then making sure that we do have a buffered bike lane in the vicinity, kind of more like 13th Street kind of thought process. So I'm going in a different direction than I had coming in, and I wanted to see if there was a thought process from the council to change where staff is looking for us to go tonight, and see if there's a consensus for that, or if we want to proceed with the design as considered. I'm thinking reducing to one lane, if it is allowed by a traffic study, could be an easier improvement than the improvements here, because it becomes predominantly striping. So perhaps I saw Councilmember Shaw nodding her head. So I don't know if there's anything that you wanted to add to that conversation.
Thank you. I would agree with your comments that I think it's at least worth looking at. I know one thing they always say with traffic is, well, if it gets a little congested in one area, you know, can people pick an alternate route? And there's certainly a ton of different ways you could travel that route. So it may work out. I would think as we go forward, I would want to see a traffic study to see if we could go down to one lane or just kind of give us an approximation of what would it cost to rework or remove the medians, just to know the cost. And I just think, though, if we do go down to one lane, we have to be realistic that it probably will be a pretty traveled lane. So we should really try to make this a protected bike lane and have that vision and get that out there. And I think that would really be worth all the extra hassle, because then it really would be a bike lane that kids could use safely, even though it was on a really busy street. Also, I do think it's possibly worth making the accommodation because it is such a densely populated area, just like Council Member Lance brought up with the apartment building. So it's different than just a single family all the way. I would like to know the cost of reworking the medians, the possibility of going to one lane. I do like the suggestion of going no turn on red all the way around. It just, people will be less confused, maybe. And I just want to keep in mind, whatever the final design is, to have that biking continuity, that we do have we don't just lose the lane between Grand and, what is it, Long Branch, that we try to have the lane. So those would be my comments, but I would be supportive of those ideas of, I'm sorry, Greg, but taking another look.
Okay, great. And maybe I'll next go to Councilmember Lance to see if she had anything to add. And maybe a question for you first is, did I understand you say that it gets congested beyond Mentone going south? And so you take a right there, or is it more that you take it does get congested between Grand Avenue and Mentone?
It gets congested because there's a stop sign. I mean, but not nearly as bad as the Saratoga stop sign. So I would say it's maybe a half of that. But as Councilmember Shaw mentioned, I mean, even in my head, I'm thinking right now, okay, if I don't take Oak Park, I can take 13th and then cross over, you know, at Grand or wherever, and then go up the hill, you know. So these are things that people think. Sometimes I take 4th and go around the other way. So yes, there are options for redirecting traffic if it goes eventually down to one lane and that's warranted. I will say that this weekend I wasn't scootering. My son was scootering on the part of South Oak Park between the Pike and Mentone. And the bike lane there is striped, at least on the west side of the street. And although we won't always have physical distancing, my son was going quite fast with his little scooter, and people were removing themselves from the sidewalk. They were walking towards us to allow him to have the sidewalk to scooter down, and they were walking in the bike lane with their dogs. And so it's just a point being made that, like, bike lanes are for primarily, obviously, bicycling, but it comes in handy for other things as well. And having, you know, just that space is so helpful when in all different kind of circumstances. And, you know, I was thankful that the person was able to walk their dog in the bike lane for that few, you know, 50 feet while my son, you know, took up the whole sidewalk. I think whatever we can do to get that bike lane is crucial, but I think it's not something to rush, especially when, you know, there are other things that are challenging about it. So although I personally don't think that a study would come out saying that it could go down to one lane, I am not an expert in that. And so I have no idea, actually. So I would be open to taking that step in order to make a most informed decision we can before, you know, doing a beautiful street without all the pieces of knowledge that may be helpful.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Thank you for those comments. So next we'll go back to Mayor Pro Tem Bright, see if there's any comments or feedback you want to give on the conversation we've been having.
Thank you. Well, certainly before we went to one lane, if that's what the majority is considering, I would certainly want to have more information. My concern would be pushing traffic to another road. That would be a major concern of mine, particularly pushing traffic to a more residential street when Oak Park is to be a main arterial road. That's what it's designed for. That's what it's supposed to be. So I would be very concerned about doing something like that. So, but I would be more than happy to consider that option. Regarding the medians, well, they are supposed to be a traffic calming measure. So to remove them, I think that could be counterproductive. Now, I do agree they're not very attractive. We could certainly improve them and make them more attractive. Possibly making them smaller and uniform, or so that we could get some more road space, whereby we could have more room for a buffered bike lane, which I think is very important. I have talked to some folks who would really like to have a real bike lane where they would feel safe riding with their children. So I would truly like to see that. But the one lane, I'm concerned about that. That is a concern to me. So was that it? I've kind of lost track here.
No, I think that was, and then there was some, there's also been discussion about the no right on red.
Oh, yeah, the no right on red, I'm fully supportive of that.
Okay.
That has been, that's been, I've seen, yes, I'm supportive of that.
Okay, very good. So maybe the way to go here, and it's we'll try one last time to see if Councilmember Nichols is able to share. We'll let her come in if she does. So so maybe a question for the council to consider, and maybe this does go back to a different level of study, is yes, Oak Park is a regional road. And we did just do Measure K14 improvements on 16th Street. Do we consider putting that as the bike lane, not having bike lanes on Oak Park, but maintaining some parking and kind of identifying South Oak Park as what I'll call a non-bike friendly roadway, and anticipate that we move those over onto 16th Street? And so I know I'm kind of going towards several different options here, but I want to see if that would be an option. But I'll let folks weigh in on that, and then after that we'll kind of go towards what direction can we give staff this evening on several different items. So if we did proceed down towards a kind of a traffic study, whether it be a single lane, in kind of going towards what Mayor Pro Tem Bright indicated, it might be beneficial to add a component to that of, say, let's put a bike lane, whether it be buffered or otherwise, in a different spot, in a spot that is not as heavily used by vehicles, where I think 16th Street would be, I think we could kind of just agree that has less traffic than South Oak Park. And so maybe that's the place that we'd prefer to put bikes and bicyclists and pedestrian routes, rather than on South Oak Park itself. So we'll start with Councilmember Lance.
If I had it my way, there'd be bike lanes on both. I would still like to see a bike lane on Oak Park, only because I already see the benefits of it between the Pike and Entone. And just for continuity, it'd be nice to just see it throughout the entire roadway. Yeah, that's kind of where my thoughts are, I guess. Obviously, for the one lane traffic, that would involve a study no matter what. So to Mayor Pro Tem Bright's comments, I think no matter what, we're going to get some kind of input as to whether that's even warranted following a traffic study.
Okay. Very next.
Were you asking for me, Jeff, to talk?
Yeah, just to kind of additionally weigh in if there's anything else that's on our roundtable discussion.
You cut out for a second. Yeah, I would not want to do that. I haven't been down the new 16th yet, but I thought going forward, staff was going to bring us every time, just as a matter of course, anytime there was new street design, bike lanes included. So I think that giving up on bike lanes on this very crucial connector would be a step backward, especially as one of the callers who called in said, it's in one of our city goals to make this a bikeable and walkable street. And I really appreciated Councilmember Lance's comments, because I see not only bikers in the bike lane, I've seen nonstop jogging strollers. And I've also seen older people in their scooters, and they're able to walk their dog with their electric scooter. So and I see, because our bike lane on Newport is very, even though it's not a technical protected, but it's more buffered than most, I see the youngest riders out and on their scooters and really little kids getting out that I've never seen before. So, I would hate to go in the direction of giving up on having a bike lane on South Oak Park. I think that would be an absolute last resort. And while I do appreciate all the people calling in and I appreciate their responses, I think that they are also a very small percentage of the people who live on that street, much less this does affect the entire city. So I think that going forward and having the traffic study and also looking at possibly fixing the medians to create that space can be our first way to go. But the second way to go is we may have to go back and talk seriously about losing some parking. But I think we have options for now, so I would hate to jump to just giving it up right now.
Okay, good. Very good. Very good point. So let's go towards a kind of finding some low-hanging fruit, shall we say, and then because I think we've got to have a little bit more discussion about the traffic study. So if we go to the staff report, staff is looking for consensus on I'm on page 2 of the staff report, the North Oak Park Boulevard improvements. I think I heard consensus on no right turn on red signs at West Grand Avenue, but then I also did hear some consensus for in all four directions. Can we do a thumbs up if we're all in support of that? Karen, I can't see your thumb. I wasn't sure if you were supportive. So we are all supportive of no right turn on red in all four directions on West Grand Avenue. Okay. So next we'll go towards the elimination of on-street parking near the intersections and near Oak Park Christian Church. And Mr. Ray, I'm anticipating that this is consistent with your exhibit that was in your presentation, correct?
Yes. Okay. That would be consistent, right, with the exception of near the no parking near Rite Aid.
Okay. 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 So we go with. Okay. Thank you. So if we go with the exhibit that was in the presentation, I think I heard a consensus that we're all good with that. And is that correct? And then Councilmember Bright, if you could turn your microphone back on, I'm trying to figure out how to get you back on my screen and Mr. Ray back in the back.
Yes, me.
Okay, very good. So next we'll go towards the providing direction to staff to work with the city of Arroyo Grande about painting a red curb between Oak Park and the entrance to Rite Aid. Any concerns with that? Hearing none, so we'll consider that. Okay, we'll consider that a direction to Mr. Ray to have that conversation with the city of Arroyo Grande. If acceptable to the city of Arroyo Grande, are we as a council acceptable with that being painted? Okay, we are all good there. Is that clear enough direction, Mr. Ray, on that item?
Yes, I feel like I've got all the details on that. Yes.
Very good. And while we touched on it, I think all of us have been in agreement for a while now on the addition of streetlights at four intersections north of Ramona Avenue. Any concerns by anybody beyond that? I think we've been consistent with that one. Okay, so I'll consider that we're all consistent there. And then the installation of high visibility crosswalks at the controlled intersection of North Oak Park and Saratoga. Any concerns or input that anyone wants to have on that? So I think we're all in consensus on that as well. So that has our North Oak Park improvements. So then that'll take us to South Oak Park. Let's start with do we have consensus to include high visibility crosswalks at the controlled intersection of South Oak Park and Mentone? Everybody good with that? Okay.
I cross that all the time. Big proponent of that.
Okay. Very good. So, and while not specifically in the Oak Park actions this evening, I am highly supportive of staff continuing with the Safe Routes to School grant funding intersection on 10th and Manhattan. We all good there? Okay. And then obviously adding additional streetlights on North 4th and other streets over time as funding permits, and then continuing the funding of North 4th and West Grand. Okay. So I think that gets us to all of the requests that staff was looking for, with the exception of the final design of South Oak Park, which is kind of where we've veered in several different directions tonight. So if I heard the consensus correctly, council would be willing to have staff work with the improvements that we've directed this evening, but bring back a scope for a traffic study on South Oak Park to determine, and I may say this incorrectly, so someone chime in if I go sideways, to determine the best and highest use of the complete street concept between Grand and Mentone, whether that's a buffered bike lane with the either one lane or two lanes, or limited number of lanes with buffered bike lanes with potential limited areas for parking. Realizing that the medians may end up part of that conversation as well. What kind of direction do we want to provide staff with regards to the medians? So Miriam, you look like you wanted to say something. You're still muted, though.
No, I was just trying to move my camera.
Okay.
I think we should at least get a cost estimate of what it would take to look at the medians again.
Okay.
Just to know, but also the traffic study on going to one lane.
Okay. So Mayor Pro Tem Bryson, did you want to add anything?
Yes, please. I really would like to take a look at those mediums, actually, while we're at it. They really could use some work. So I think it's a great idea to have them included.
Okay. So Councilmember Lamb, anything on that?
It cut out for a minute, but I think probably was already said, yeah, a cost estimate to what it would look like to maybe narrow the medians, and I guess take them out all, as well as to have just all the different cost scenarios, even though I don't want to see that happen. And then I would be supportive of a traffic study if that's where the council wanted to go as far as determining whether the street is best served as one lane or two.
Okay, gotcha. So let me turn over to Mr. Bronson and see if we have sufficiently clouded the airways and provide and see if you can kind of summarize if there's additional information that you need from us with regards to scope or discussion on that. I know we've gone in a completely different direction than from that, but that's the beauty of having public input and meetings. So I'll turn it to Mr. Bronson momentarily and make sure that we've provided enough clarification for you.
Sure, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I've been dutifully taking down notes and listening to the conversation. And ultimately, this is the deliberative process. This is the process to help make long-term improvements. At the end of the day, this is the community street, and you are the community's representatives trying to decide how this street will look like, not just for the next 6 months, but for the next 6 years and beyond. So that's really where you're trying to thread the needle. And I can appreciate the council's work in helping to do this in the right way. And I appreciate your deliberation. Just as the council is aware, back in March, we came to you with a list of major streets. This is one of them. We came with a pretty, I'd say, routine street improvement project to pave a street that was desperately needed of new pavement. Council wanted to add bike lanes as part of that direction, and we came back and delivered that to you this evening. And now you're thinking differently about the street, and that's certainly the council's prerogative. Again, this is your street. This is a community street, and staff is delivering that direction to you, and we'll deliver this direction to you as well. It's important to get this right. It's important to balance the different interests and making sure this street is the complete street that the city council is looking for many years to come. And certainly, as staff, we will work on delivering that. Just to know that will come at a cost of time. So I think the council has expressed its willingness to accept that delay to make sure this is right. And so I think that's appropriate. This will add cost to the project in doing the design work and doing the study, and potentially add to a much larger cost overall for the project. And as we enter this next budget year, we're going to be entering some choppy waters when it comes to our financial projections and what's feasible from a cost standpoint. So I want to just make the council aware that to do this right might mean it's delayed significantly, and potentially there's a cost that would make it a more difficult project to fund over this next year. We'll do everything we can as staff to help address the costs and to find the funding sources for this, but just to go in with our eyes wide open about making sure that the ideal project is still a realistic project that can be completed given this new financial environment that we're about to enter over this next year. So again, just wanted to offer that note of caution as your staff representative, and making sure the council is aware of those trade-offs as we go into making sure that the community street is done in the best way possible.
Okay, great. I definitely appreciate that. And yes, that is something that we'll need to take into consideration. So I think from a council consensus standpoint, I'm hearing we are okay with taking that pause and yet still making sure that there are some improvements that are done in order to show some progress towards the larger goal on North Oak Park and South Oak Park. So perhaps to consider the long-term improvements on South Oak Park as well while we're taking this pause for a traffic study, is there any refreshing of striping that can be done in its existing configuration that might provide some additional clarification for vehicles as they're moving south on South Oak Park? Is that something that that we can refresh some of that while we're taking this pause for a traffic study? Apologize for putting you on the spot for that.
Now, just to clarify, are you talking about the entire length of South Oak Park from Grand to Mentone in this particular segment that's under discussion?
I think from my perspective, it would be great if we could do all of that, but I don't know if the council has a specific segment that they would like to see. The first segment from Grand to Long Branch might be a place to better define until that. But let's see if the council has anything to suggest on that. So we'll go towards Councilmember Shaw first.
I had a question, but you know, if we can refresh striping, I mean, hopefully with the study, this is only a 5 or 6 month additional, really. Well, Greg even said three. I'm just saying 3 to 5, given the current, you know, world we're living in. One question I had is just with this additional looking at South Oak Park, would that cause us to have to wait on the improvements of North Oak Park and Grand, or could we go forward with that? Because that all seemed pretty solid.
That's a great question. Mr. Bronson, is that appropriate for you or for Mr. Ray?
I will defer that to Mr. Ray.
So as it currently stands, from a design perspective, you know, they're in the same project, but one thought would be that we could separate, you know, keep the design moving forward and finalize the design there right at Grand Avenue. And then move that forward as a separate project. I guess my only concern with that would be, you know, is ultimately we're going to be repaving South Oak Park right up to Grand, which means any striping we did now would be essentially thrown away and redone, at least in that area. But, you know, that wouldn't be an enormous cost necessarily, maybe in the $10,000 range of striping that would be ultimately eliminated, and then another $10,000 to stripe it again. So $20,000 versus $10,000 if we waited to the end of the project.
Okay.
So I'm not too worried about making improvements on South Oak Park, but I just would like to see North Oak Park up to Grand and the whole right-hand turn thing, and I would like to see that go forward, because it seems like there isn't as much to change there. And I just also want to thank staff for their willingness to look at this again. I think one reason that we thought this wouldn't be as big of a deal is when we reached out to people on North Oak Park, they were fine with losing their parking. We really didn't get any complaints about it, I don't think. So this at least came as a little bit, you know, it's great feedback, and I appreciate people calling in and letting us know, because we wouldn't know unless they said. So that, I think, was unexpected, and I just think all of us are trying to be responsive to that. So I appreciate everyone trying to have this flexibility.
So with that, is there a consensus to provide direction to staff to work on North Oak Park I'd be supportive of that. So Councilmember Lance.
Yes, I'm supportive of bifurcating and doing the North Oak Park as one project. What I would mention about the striping, although it is a low cost, that road there is not so great. So it would kind of be, I think it would, the perception would be paving over kind of a not so great street pavement, or sorry, not paving, striping over kind of poor pavement there might be kind of funky, but if that's what we decide to do, then we can look at that. But that would be my comment temporary striping.
Okay. Very good. Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Definitely, I'd like to see us go forward with North Oak Park. And I don't think I'd be in favor of us striping South Oak Park at this time. I think I'd rather just have it all done at one time. That would just be my opinion.
Okay. Very good. Sounds like we've got a consensus there. So just because of the recovering engineer in me, Mr. Ray, if we did the striping on North Oak Park north of Grand Avenue, would we still be able to at this point? I'm thinking we keep two left turn lanes, just one straight and a dedicated right. So in your exhibit, you had a dedicated left, a joint left and straight, a dedicated straight, and a dedicated right. So if we're not going to do anything south of Oak Park, south of Grand, should we just maintain those two left turn lanes and then just have a single straight and then a single right? I saw a shake of a head by Councilmember Lance.
Just to clarify, it's right now it's two left turn lanes.
Yep.
And the new design is for one left turn lane, one left turn lane or straight, one straight, and then one only right.
And that's what's in the staff report. And
right.
And I guess so where I'm going is from a, since we're not going to be doing anything south of Oak Park, so we technically don't have two lanes to feed straight. Should we just keep two lefts, a straight and a right, or am I overthinking this?
If it's safe to move into South Oak Park with the proposed lane changes in North Oak Park, I personally would think it would be best to keep it as proposed, unless it was unsafe because we weren't restriping South Oak Park at the same time.
Okay. Perhaps I'll just turn to Mr. Ray for a moment to see if there's any concerns
That's
on your part.
Though. That's a good point.
So, yeah, hopefully you can hear me. In order to achieve the change in striping on the north side of Grand Avenue, we would need to restripe the south side, at least right near the intersection.
Right.
Mayor Lee, your comment, I'd have to look at it a little more to see if we could come up with sort of a modified version, an interim version, if you will, until South Oak Park was paved, and then we could do the final version. Depending on council's direction tonight, if council's direction is to try to come up with an interim version, we can certainly look at that and see if that's possible. Otherwise, we would have to strike both sides, at least for a short distance on the south side of Grand Avenue, just to make sure the lanes are aligned. And we'd also have to make some signal modifications.
Right.
What was that last? What's your last comment? I'm sorry, Greg. We'd have to make some what?
Well, it does require some modifications to the timing of the signal controller.
Okay.
We're creating a left and through movement as it stands right now, which doesn't exist. So that does change the way the intersection operates a bit. again, back to the idea of some kind of an interim, we could look at that. I'm just not sure what all that would impact without spending some time on it.
Yeah. And I guess my thought was, right now we've got two dedicated lefts, a straight and a joint straight right. And so if we maintained the two dedicated lefts, had a dedicated straight and a dedicated right, that would make for the least amount of impacts to the intersection itself and not require anything south of Grand Avenue. But I think perhaps we delve too far down into the details, and I think staff understands the goal of obviously having a safe intersection and doing the North Oak Park improvements in a fashion that allows for traffic to get through the intersection in a safe and efficient fashion.
I'd be happy to work with GHD and look at a interim, you know, that gets us part of the way there, and that can ultimately be modified to get us all the way there when we get the South Oak Park project done. So I think that's clear enough.
Okay, very good. So then before we leave this item, is there any other comments, suggestions that or clarification to staff that either staff needs or that I'll start with staff first to see if there's anything else that we need to clarify for you? Either not, Mr. Ray or Mr. Bronson?
Not from my perspective.
No, and not from mine either. Again, we want to make sure we get this street right, and we've heard the council's direction on this. And then just one other little point, with the medians, we have done some landscaping in the last 2 years that we hadn't done before. To Greg's point, we were doing some additional landscaping this year, but we had put a freeze on those funds given our need to tighten up our current year expenditures. So it looks better than it did before. It was going to look much better, but given the financial realities we're facing, we have pulled back on those funds for now.
Okay. And so kind of to augment that conversation, there has been a community group that's come forward, and we were starting to have some conversations before the COVID-19 situation arose, and we were trying to figure out how to have some community involvement safely be able to do work in the medians and to spruce them up and beautify those. So perhaps that conversation can advance as well, depending upon where South Oak Park goes. So I think we're good on that item. With that, this is going to be an interesting question for Ms. Sims. I have had a request for a brief break, and so I'm anticipating let's take a break until let's go 8:30, but I don't know how that works from a Zoom or from a team meeting standpoint. Do we all put something over our microphones and our videos, or how does this work?
I believe you can turn off your cameras, and then and we can try to bring back one of the slides.
Very good. Okay, let's go ahead and do that. Let's take a 13-minute break. We'll see you back at 8:30, everyone. Thank you. We'll see who has come back. So I see obviously Councilmember Shaw is here. City Manager Bronson was here. Mr. Ray, our city engineer. Has Councilmembers Lance or Bright been able to come back and join us?
I'm here. Karen's here. Karen Bright.
Okay. I think I heard Desi as well.
And yes.
I'll go ahead and give Councilmember Nichols an opportunity. I see her on the screen and she's not muted, but I don't hear her. Okay. Hearing no response, we'll go actually first to City Clerk Sims and see if we are ready to continue from an AGP standpoint.
AGP is ready.
Very good. Okay. Then I will return this meeting to order of the April 20th City Council meeting for the City of Grover Beach. And that will take us to item number 11. Thank you, everyone, for your participation on the prior item. I think we had some good conversation. I'll turn it over to item number 11, which is an update on the city's COVID-19 response. City Manager Bronson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Members of the council, what's before you is an update from city staff on our city's COVID-19 response. As the council is aware, I'm using these meetings to help provide an update on what's happening at a countywide level, what we're doing at a city level, and provide a forum for the council to ask questions and provide any input or information with our continued response to the COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic. Some of the information in the staff report is similar to last time. I won't highlight that. What I will highlight are the new pieces of information related to what's happening at a countywide level and a city level. So just overall, as of today, the county has seen 132 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in the county. There are 2 current hospitalizations, and 111 individuals have recovered from the virus. So that's a good news story. We've seen a decline in hospitalizations, an increase in recoveries, and overall, since early April, there's been an average of about 2 new cases a day. So we've all heard that term, flatten the curve, throughout this entire virus pandemic situation. And that is indeed what has happened in San Luis Obispo County. We have flattened the curve. The actions of our entire community have worked to flatten the curve across the county. Overall, about half the cases have been in North County. South County, there have been roughly 35 cases. And overall, we've seen lower numbers here in our community. Over the last couple of weeks, the county has really focused on developing what it calls its alternative care site at Cal Poly, this triaging facility that could treat COVID-19 patients who are not at the point of being hospitalized. That facility is open, yet it's empty right now. It's not being used because there's not a current demand for that site, but it's ready to go, staffed by volunteers and put together through the tremendous work of the private sector and public sector in bringing this type of facility together. There is a possibility the facility could be used for outlying or neighboring counties, given the cases that they're seeing, but those discussions are still underway. I'll say that also the county has been putting a lot of effort into having safe areas for homeless individuals to be in during the COVID crisis. I mentioned last time that there are 3 safe parking areas in the county. The one nearest us is the Coastal Dunes Campground in Oceano. All 3 facilities have been fairly well utilized, with the Coastal Dunes Campground having roughly 30 to 35 occupants per night. It is the most utilized facility amongst those 3. In fact, the county has expanded the number of spaces from 20 spaces to 30 spaces, given this demand at the Coastal Dunes Campground. Also mentioned that the county is currently conducting what are called wellness checks at local meal service locations, including the People's Kitchen location at Life Point Church here in Grover Beach, to test homeless individuals who are showing symptoms of COVID-19 so that we are not missing this vulnerable population within our community, making sure that any cases of COVID-19 are picked up through these efforts as well. So the county is leading that work right now. Lastly, with the county, I'll say that the major area of focus at this time is getting ready for this reopening in a safe and responsible way. Last Friday, the county did extend its shelter-at-home ordinance through May 16th, with a 2-week review period. So they extended it by 30 days, but said in 2 weeks, we will review this timing again. In addition, the county is working very hard right now at putting together a phased reopening plan that will identify what conditions and circumstances will be in place for a phased reopening to occur within our communities, in our businesses, in our places of worship, in social gatherings. There's a team of medical and legal experts putting this plan together right now, and there will be a given to a series of community stakeholder groups this week for input and deliberation, including a stakeholder group here in Grover Beach that Mayor Lee and I will be chairing. So that work is taking place this week in order to have a reopening plan that's done by next weekend, April 26th, so that when the governor lifts the stay-at-home order on a state or gives local governments, local areas, the ability to lift regulations at a local level, our county will be ready with this phased reopening plan that will determine how we'll be reopening in a safe and responsible way. So that's been a major area of focus for the county and, frankly, for many of us in local government and the private sector, and we'll know more about that plan over the course of this week as it's developed and finalized and ready to go. Also, the county is working on a longer-term economic development strategy through its partnership with Project Reach to help identify the different phases of recovery, reopening, and then developing greater resiliency in our economy longer term. But right now, the focus is all about reopening safely and in a responsible way that does not jeopardize public health benefits that we have seen over our work over the last month. So then turning my attention to the city update, over the last 2 weeks, our focus has continued to be providing essential services to our community in accordance with the countywide, statewide orders, and making sure we are fulfilling the business compliance as set forth by the county. And on that note, the county today did ease some restrictions in four different areas that we're following locally as well. They're allowing hospitals to conduct elective procedures now when the hospitals are ready. Two, the county is allowing animal grooming businesses to resume operations. Three, they're allowing for recreational fishing to take place aside from commercial tours. Doesn't impact us a whole lot, but that's something that impacts more of the incorporated areas. And four, the county is allowing all construction to continue and with permits issued. To date, it's been focused on essential business construction, so the essential businesses and essential residential, but now the county is allowing all construction to go on and have permits go through the process. So we are implementing that in our process as well. So again, back to the city's work, our facilities continue to be closed to the public. Our parks still have closures at the sports courts, at the playgrounds for public health reasons. The public can still contact us at our main city line and email address, and we'll respond to them as quickly as possible. Our employees are doing a great job, a fabulous job, in continuing to serve the community in a very capable manner, carrying out services to help continue moving our community forward. Again, a particular shout out to our maintenance and public safety personnel. They're on the front lines every day. They're not working at home. They're working directly in the community, but taking every precaution that they need to take with our PPE and other precautions that we are putting in place. I'll also say that city departments now are working on a plan for reopening our departments and our facilities consistent with the county's plan, so that when the state gives the county the green light and the county gives us the green light, we're ready to go and making sure that our operations are reopened in a safe, responsible manner for our public and for our employees. And also taking advantage of some new ways to do business. These last few weeks have given us a chance to use technology in a whole different way, as evident by this meeting this evening. We're also doing online reporting now in the police department to allow the public to submit online reports for many more routine type of crime reports, to allow the public to do that from the privacy and comfort of their own home versus having to come to the police station directly. Moving into a couple other points, we are still tracking the economic impacts of COVID-19 and how that affects our city finances. On May 4th, we'll be presenting our financial projections to the City Council for this fiscal year and for next fiscal year. And we'll be going through the revenue losses that we are projecting in sales taxes and hotel taxes and cannabis taxes, and how we intend to mitigate those losses. I would say our our revenues are fairly diversified as a city. We're not dependent upon only one industry, but yet we are going to see some significant revenue losses that will preclude some of the opportunities that we were striving for, hoping for this fiscal year and next year. So we'll have to be realistic about what we can take on this next year, knowing that there could be some additional financial rough waters coming forward once we have PERS cost increases going forward and other potential economic impacts. So we'll present that more information more on May 4th and really work on creating a balanced budget for next year that's financially responsible but still provides essential services to our community. And lastly, I'll just say that our community has been wonderful in adhering to the shelter at home order and only going outside for essential activities. The community has responded in a tremendous way, and that has been seen in the low number of cases and the community spirit that you see across the community. I was unable to be part of the call earlier on when Ms. Petker talked about some of the community spirit activities, but just to underscore the GB Spring spirit, the Arbor Day festivities, and the GB Together yard signs that say, "We got this. This is a tough time for us as a community, but we got this. We're a community that comes together and helps each other." That makes a big difference. And the community has rallied around that, has come together around that, and it really reflects the spirit of the community in a way that's been galvanizing and very positive in these very difficult times. We want to continue fostering that as city government to help the community come together and support one another. And we'll be taking a number of steps for us to do that as we go forward. So with that, I will pause and see if the council has any questions or comments. And I believe both our chiefs are also on the line in case the council would like to hear from our first responding chiefs.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Bronson. Appreciate that update. So before I turn it over to the council for questions or to the chiefs, I did want to add just one item that the council probably saw today if you're either watching the governor's briefing or at the Assemblyman Cunningham's Facebook page is as I've mentioned previously, the mayors are getting briefed on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday by the county prior to the daily briefings that are occurring. And we did get a heads up yesterday regarding the relaxation of several of the of the restrictions that the county announced today. And then one of the other elements that came out of yesterday's call was a letter initially penned by Assemblyman Cunningham and then signed on to by several supervisors and then the mayors of all seven cities. And it basically is encouraging local control. The county doesn't have an opportunity to lift restrictions until the governor and the state provide them with that authority. And so what the letter effectively does, it doesn't commit us to anything, which is why I was comfortable signing it on behalf of the city without briefing you first. It basically says, we are unique in the state and we have different circumstances than other counties. So we'd like to, in conjunction with our public health officials, our EOC directors, and other appropriate first responders, plan a path that the governor allows for each individual county to maneuver how those restrictions are eased. And the question was asked at the governor's briefing this afternoon by a member of the LA Times, actually, had he seen the San Luis Obispo County elected officials' letter. And his response was, as you might expect, not specific. He just said, we're a big we're a state. We have different needs in various locations, and we'll take that under advisement. So, but it was an opportunity for us to express the good work that's been done locally by each of the cities and the county in conjunction with that. So I'll turn it over to the police chief first and see if there's any updates, and then we'll go to Mr. Lieberman, and then we'll come back to the council. So, Mr. Peters, Chief Peters, anything you wanted to add?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council and community. I'll ditto what Manager Bronson has stated. Everything has been pretty decent in our county so far. Everybody has been adhering to the social distancing, which is definitely helping. I'll also say that GB Together, we do have our sign out in front of the station, as with everybody else around the community. Patrols are still continuing. Lots of extra foot patrols and business checks and everything else. So officers are plenty busy and well-protected and helping to protect the community. So thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Chief. Appreciate that. Chief Lieberman, anything that you wanted to share?
Good evening, Mayor, Council, Community. Steve Lieberman, Fire Chief. It's great batting cleanup after these two gentlemen. I think they've shared a lot of great information with the Council. I will say Five Cities Fire Authority, we're part of the community. I have my sign in my yard. I do want to say that our call volume has not really dropped in terms of emergency medical calls from a year-to-year basis. Our percentage of those calls that are meeting criteria for a suspected COVID patient is hovering right around 11%, and that's been steady for the last couple of weeks. Again, not confirmed cases, but people that have those symptoms that we're all very aware of. Entertain any questions you may have.
Very good. Thank you, Chief. I appreciate that. Let's reach out to the council, and we'll start with Councilmember Lance, see if you have any questions.
No questions, just continued gratitude for everything that everybody's doing in our community. Appreciate it.
Very good. Next, we'll go to Councilmember Shaw.
Yeah, same here. No questions. I was speaking today with some people in New Jersey and in Detroit, and they were very jealous of the response in California and were, you know, very just saying, wow, you guys really did it right. And they're really in the thick of it. So I know for myself, it's been hard sometimes because we aren't seeing the cases and you're continuing to stay home and it's getting hard on people. So I really just echo the comments of appreciating our community and sticking through this. And I think I'm excited that we can start talking about what the future looks like. So that's exciting.
Very good. And we'll try and reach out to Councilmember Nichols, see if there's anything that she can share. We'll head back over to Mayor Pro Tem Bright, see if there's any comments that you wanted to make or questions.
Thank you. I do wonder, how many cases have we had in Grover Beach? Does anybody know?
So what I'll and I can respond to that, Mr. Bronson, is the county is tracking cases and is providing announcements to the number of cases in a region or in a city when it reaches five. And currently, Grover Beach does not have enough cases to be on that list. We are the only incorporated city in the county that has not reached that threshold. And so we have less than five cases in Grover Beach.
Well, that's interesting. Good to hear. Because I'd heard on the news the other day that the lowest city in this county was Pismo with five. So,
and actually, so if you go to readyslow.org, the number of cases, and so you'll notice we as a city would be grouped in the other category.
The other, okay.
Yeah. So just to add to that, the media report is correct. Pismo Beach is the lowest city identified, but to the mayor's point, we're not identified, therefore we have fewer than five cases.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay, well that makes sense. Well, thank you. And I too want to add my gratitude as well to those who you know fight this every day and have to be exposed. And so I really do thank our first responders very much. So thank you.
Very good. Okay. So with that, we I'll open this up to public communications and just announce one last time that if there is any member of the public who wishes to comment on this item, then please call in at area code 805-321-6639. And so I'll turn it over at the moment to City Clerk Sims and see if we have anyone on the line.
At this moment, no, we do not have any callers.
Okay, very good. But I do understand that we do have some emails that have come in. So if you would read those, please. And then I know we had some emails that came in earlier today, and I'll kind of summarize or provide the highlights of the ones that came in earlier. So, Ms. Sims.
Okay. I did receive an email during the meeting from a Timothy Whiteford. And basically it just says, please enforce the rules of making customers wear masks, just like us, an employee who have to wear one because the more they don't wear masks is putting us more at a higher risk to get the virus. Thank you. The next one is from Tammy White. As an essential grocery worker, I am very concerned about the lack of seriousness in wearing protective masks by all customers who walk into our store. This is important because I stand behind a counter only 2 feet from shoppers, which puts me and my coworkers at a high risk for COVID. In addition to wearing masks, we have a very small plexiglass in place that doesn't protect enough since it is only in front of the computer and doesn't span far enough to protect on all sides, leaving us open to being infected. I feel these issues need to be addressed and would be greatly appreciated. Thank you. And my last one is from Rhonda Ivy. Good evening, Mayor and City Council members. My name is Rhonda Ivy, and I'm writing this in support of the safe working conditions at Grover Beach Fawns. And that's it.
Okay, very good. And we did receive a number of emails. I think I'll read the one where a number of commenters are referring back to an email by Lori Rawls, where she says, and I'm reading from her email, as a grocery clerk, I provide an essential service. I am duty bound and required to report to work in a place that offers me no real protection from COVID-19. In fact, I am at a much higher risk because I'm in continuous direct contact with up to 250 potentially infected people per day. I'm not afforded 6 feet of social distancing. I get about 2. They installed a small plexiglass window at our check stands. However, customers have to stand on either side of it, negating its intended purpose. Traffic is not restricted in my store, and there are times that customers are lined up all the way down the aisles to the back of the store. We have markers suggesting one-way aisles, and they are adhered to about as well as the face coverings are. We cannot meet CDC guidelines in my store. 30-40% of my customers do not wear masks, even though there are signs posted at entrances stating that a face covering is required to enter the building. I have 51 people are infected and 1 is dead at my employer's distribution facility in Tracy, California. That's how well they are protecting us. Nationwide, over 1,500 grocery workers have tested positive. 3,000 are hospitalized or quarantined, and over 40 have passed away. As a caregiver to my elderly parents, I am terrified of infecting them. I do not feel safe, and I fear for their safety as well. I am asking you for protection now for myself and for my colleagues who are afraid to assert their rights for fear of retaliation. And then she closes, my mask protects you and your mask protects me. And so I'll go ahead and then also indicate just the names of folks who have presented supporting communications of that email. There's a TJ Glaza. Just sending a support message towards Ms. Rawls' communication of mandatory face masks to be worn inside grocery stores. Let's keep all safe and healthy. Additionally, Jennifer Pluto. And then additionally, also a Tina McReynolds. It just recently started working at my local grocery store because of my place of employment had to close due to COVID-19. It was not an easy choice to make going out into pretty much the front lines, but I had to do it to support my family. Again, a Gail Welsh. Our daughter works as a grocery clerk. She is also a caregiver. We are elderly and self-isolating as required. She wears the protection required for working with the public. At issue is that the customers are not wearing the protection, i.e. masks, suggested while inside a public building. Working as a grocery clerk, she's unable to maintain the 6-foot distance required to protect each other from the COVID-19 virus. The stress this creates for her is over the top. We are requesting you mandate all persons wear protection while in a public building. And then there's also one from Jenny Sanko, kind of iterating the request for face coverings. And then there's also a Corey Keelan. I am emailing you today about conditions in the store I work at. And it kind of reiterates a number of the items that were brought up in the previous emails. And then a last one from Kathy Dornan. During this time of crisis, it is imperative for our local government to enact and enforce the wearing of face masks by the public, not only to protect themselves, but to protect the people that provide essential services, i.e. grocery clerks, cashiers, and food service. These people put themselves in peril to provide food, medicine, and the very products we use for everyday survival. So those are the other public communications that we received on this item. So before I close public communications,
Mary Lee, I do see we do have one caller that just called in.
Okay, very good. We'll see. Please bring them forward. And if you would state your name for the record and provide your comments, please.
Hello, this is Rachel Mann again. I spoke earlier about the bike lanes. I'm calling regarding this issue. I want to affirm the comments that were just made about the email from Ms. Rawls, and I am hopeful that people will hear that and understand that wearing a mask is about protecting other people and showing that you think they deserve protection. I work at a small chemical plant in San Luis Obispo. We are honored to be supplying ingredients for the COVID test kits. We make a number of different specialty chemicals. And we have switched to a new schedule in order to increase our production without having to add staff and trying to keep our staff safe. So I want to thank the council and all of the Grover Beach first responders who are supporting the measures we need to take to keep everybody safe. It means if our plant stays open, it means we get through this faster. And I appreciate that. I know it's a pain. I know it's hard to be away from people. I haven't hugged a person in over a month. But we are in this together. And I want to tell you how much I appreciate what everybody's sacrifice means in order for me to be able to keep doing my work and for our plant to stay open.
Thank you for those comments. So I'll turn back to City Clerk Sims and see if anyone else has called in.
No, I do not see any more calls, and I do not have any more emails.
Okay, very good. Then I will go ahead and close this item to public communications. And perhaps, and again, I'm going to apologize to the city manager for not giving a heads up on this, but I have this the sense that he's going to be able to respond appropriately to my question. Is and I've actually presented this information on the mayor's calls as well. And Dr. Bornstein has presented information where in her guidance from CDC that it is guidance to provide face coverings. And so what I've asked is, could individual businesses be more restrictive than that? And her response has been yes. So I guess ultimately my question to the city manager is, we as a city don't have the ability to add Dr. Bornstein's recommendation of this, as she's the public health officer. Is that correct?
Are you asking if the city can require use of masks in stores? Is that what you're asking, Mr. Mayor?
Ultimately, yes. And realizing that there is a twitching attorney somewhere on here as well that we may need to hear from as well. But realizing that it is ultimately a private business for that. But yes, that would be ultimately my question is, do we have the right as a city to enforce that in private businesses or in public or just in general?
So I would like Mr. Hale to respond to the legality of it, but let me just maybe respond to the concept and provide some context. Currently, and I'm looking at the readyslow.org website as we speak, the county is recommending the use of face coverings in certain situations, particularly if you cannot maintain 6 feet of physical distance from others outside the household. They are essentially following the CDC guidance. So that is what the County of San Luis Obispo is guiding the local governments and businesses across the area from a government standpoint, knowing that businesses can take further methods, further steps themselves as elective actions by a store. But to date, there is no countywide order. There's no citywide order across the county. I am aware of a few counties that have taken that step. County of Sonoma up in the Bay Area has taken that step in the last day or two. I understand that some counties in Southern California may have taken that step. But typically, those are done on a countywide level, not on an individual jurisdictional level. They'll all defer to the city attorney to be able to speak more to whether that tool is in our toolbox as something the city could consider if that was the council's direction. But again, the guidance from the county has been recommended in certain situations as a countywide guidance overall. So with that, Mr. City Attorney.
Thank you, Mayor. I think the answer to your question is yes. We've declared a declaration of emergency. Our local ordinance gives us very broad powers. State law, under the Emergency Services Act, gives us the authority and the ability to enforce orders both at the county and the state level. So I would have to do a little bit of research, but I'm pretty certain that the city would have the ability to do that. I did pull up just a few minutes ago a number of cities in Los Angeles area that have actually done that, passed ordinances. So I'd want to double check just to make sure that legally we stand on solid grounds, but I'm fairly certain the answer is yes.
Okay. Very good. Thank you for that input. Let's turn to the council, see if there's any questions on the updates, and we'll start with Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you, I think. When I heard that Bonds supposedly was requiring people to wear masks, I will only shop there. However, I experienced the same thing. I really love the idea of how they had the aisles set up so you could only have two people at a time and go follow the footsteps and how you're supposed to go down those aisles. However, people were just wandering aimlessly, and I noticed that there were several people who were not wearing masks, and one gentleman who's coming right at me, he's hacking like he had a cold or whatever, and of course he wasn't wearing a mask. So it was very disturbing. So all that said, I just don't know. I mean, what do you do? Say we go forward and put some sort of order in place. What do you do with people that just refuse? I just don't know how much of a police city do we want to be, I guess, is my question. I got a dog problem. So excuse me for just a moment. May I get back to you?
Of course. Yep.
Thank you.
So we'll next go to Lance. Yep. So we'll wish Councilmember Bright good luck with her dog and see if Councilmember Lance has anything she wants to add.
First off, just very much grateful for the people that have provided their comments and have shared their fears and their concerns with us. Completely validated. I couldn't imagine being in that position and being exposed at that level every day, where I'm very much safe at my home in my four walls. But it is a huge undertaking for our community to put in a requirement to wear a mask at all places. I would entertain a conversation about it if the council wanted to have that conversation, but it would not be taken lightly by me whatsoever, and it would be, I think, involve a lot of deliberation about just human freedom and what that looks like. And I would only hope that River Beach has already done such a great job staying at home and keeping our cases under five in our little community, that I would just strongly hope that we could do this on a purely voluntary level if possible, with maybe some heightened, blasts and communication, not just by us as a city, but at the business community as a whole. Maybe not just Vons, but other businesses, if they could kind of rally behind them as well, that might be a way to do it without getting to the point of enforcing an order throughout the city. So those would be my comments in this preliminary time discussing it.
Okay, very good. Thank you for those. So we'll go to Councilmember Shaw next.
Yeah, this is a tough one. And I really thank the grocery workers for writing in and making these comments, because I haven't even been to a grocery store. I've just been ordering the groceries. So I don't really know how it's been. But I do think that masks are going to be the new normal for quite some time. So the sooner people quit fighting it and get into it and use it, and people don't have an excuse. I mean, we made one out of a t-shirt and two rubber bands. So, I worry about an ordinance because I do worry about enforcement. But really, in a town as small as ours, I do notice people going to pick up food at the restaurants, and they don't wear masks either. And but at least they can social distance and have people wait outside and take people one at a time. But it still is dangerous for the workers. And I'm just wondering but Vaughn's, that is going to be a hotspot for a long time. And those workers get so much exposure, more than any of us, probably more than people even at the hospitals who at least have the N95. I'm just wondering if we can legally write a letter, not requiring, but at least suggesting, and that especially the owners of, especially Vons, they are one business that is clearly not suffering in this. They are still making money. Why can't they have masks available at the door? Not N95 masks, but the cheapo masks available at the door. Then people aren't going to have an excuse. I mean, I just think maybe we could write a letter asking them to protect their workers better and giving some suggestions, at least something like that, or at least requiring, if before doing an ordinance that we have to enforce on the whole public, maybe doing an ordinance requiring business owners to provide certain things like masks to keep their employees safe, maybe something like that. But I do think if there is something we can do, we should think about it, because I think masks are going to be around a while.
Okay, very good. Thanks for that input. I'll try one more time, Councilmember Nichols. See if she has solved her technology issues. If not, I'll go ahead and turn it back to Mayor Pro Tem Bright. So hopefully your dog issues are okay.
Thank you. I just had to let her outside. Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
I think Councilmember Shaw is absolutely correct. I think that is an excellent idea if we could support the business owners in suggesting that they protect their workers. I think that could that could certainly be a really good first step, and certainly something that we could talk about, and I would definitely support and get behind.
Okay. And I in hearing the request from the grocery workers, obviously there's others in similar situations. I was at over the weekend, I was at two or three different local businesses, and miners had a situation where you were actually queuing outside the facility and requesting masks before they go in. As one person was exiting, they would allow another person to come in. So they were actually practicing crowd control inside the store as well. And then Julia's Juice Bar had a one person in the store at a time. Grover mm-hmm. Beach Sourdough, same type of situation. So we've got situations where people are doing that by a matter of course, where the Vons for whatever particular reasons has that, but has not chosen to enforce it. So perhaps I know the city manager and I are working with some of the local folks on some of those reopening discussions, and perhaps that gives him or myself or both of us an opportunity to have a conversation with the store manager and have the conversation, and then if a letter is appropriate, maybe that's we can follow up as a kind of that saying we've received number of written and verbal requests from his staff, and please take that under consideration and making sure that A, his employees are safe, their staff is safe, and then obviously the public as it enters the building, they're provided that safety and precaution as well. So city manager, anything that we've expressed so far that gives you pause? And I'll let Mr. Hale see if anything gives him pause either.
I think your comments about maybe a first step, having a conversation with the Bonds manager would be a good first step. And we have been in touch with them throughout this process. And so I think this will be useful for us to bring forward to them. We are going to be looking at the phase reopening plan that the county is putting together. And I think this input could help be beneficial and help frame that phase reopening plan to see what comes out of that plan, to see how that provides information for what businesses need to provide for their employees and for the public to be safe. And that may be, I think, a useful step forward to see what comes out of that plan. And if that plan ultimately is not to the council's desire with regards to this area, perhaps then some more restrictions are in place. But perhaps now, as a first step, the input, the information, the contact would be the right first step out of this conversation, and to see what that could lead to, and then see what the phase reopening plan looks like before we contemplate more restrictive actions that may be difficult to enforce and difficult to prosecute in the end.
Okay.
So, may I, Jeff?
Yes, of course.
And I've been thinking about this quite a bit, actually, when I started hearing that we were going to start, not only we, but throughout the state and the country, we're going to start reopening our businesses and so on. And I heard people, saying, oh, we've got this huge facility that's been put together at Cal Poly. Nobody's using it. My concern has been people aren't wearing their masks, and we start reopening, that facility is going to be needed. And it frightens me. It actually keeps me up at night thinking that here we're going to, I'm just concerned that we're going to end up back where we started if people are not protecting themselves and others. So I think, Matt, that is really just a fine idea. That will give us another level later on, should we hopefully not need to use it, but it's just something, another tool that we have that we can use later on if we need to.
Right. Yeah, and I think to just kind of reiterate upon that as well, I think any reopening plan acknowledges a protocol in place that if cases rise or become more numerous, that there is a method to kind of increase the controls like we have in place right now. So I think that is definitely been part of all of the reopening discussions that I've heard, and I would anticipate that would continue as well. So that there's got to be a very phased, very methodical, as I've heard people say, a scientific method and a public health, but also a public benefit to the reopening as well. So City Manager, did you want to add anything else to that?
I would echo all that. We need to reopen as quickly but as safely as possible. We might not reopen in the same way that we closed back in March. And that's part of the public reality that we're going to have to adapt to as we figure out what the next steps look like, and having the community's patience and moving through this process will be paramount.
Okay. Very good. So so with that, unless there's any other council discussion on that item, we'll go Councilmember Lance. Councilmember Shaw. Mayor Pro Tem Bright. Okay. Then I think I'll just do some closing comments here, and kind of the City Manager alluded to it. He and I have been kind of spearheading a series of videos that have been posted on social media throughout the course of the pandemic, and I know there's been a number of photos and comments and all very good information from council members, but we did get an opportunity to create a yard sign through the work of city staff and a local print shop, the Grover Beach We Got This, and hashtag GB together, and I think we've had a really good response to that, and we appreciate the community for taking the interest in that. And my very un-actor-like approach to the video was posted on social media, and even reached up to KSBY, where they did a quick little story on that. So I think we've had some traction with that. We've had some really good responses on social media, and appreciate staff for thinking of an idea of that nature. And perhaps, Mr. Bronson, you can kind of let us know where folks can pick those up, or if we're already at our capacity and we're waiting for new ones to arrive. So what's been the results in the last couple of days?
The results have been fantastic. You drive around, you walk around, you bike around, you see all sorts of We Got This signs in front yards and in parks and businesses. So there are still some signs available. They are located at 16th Street Park and Ramona Park, along the City Hall and the Community Center, and just walk up, grab a sign, and take it with you. It's meant to be pretty simple to go to your nearest facility and get a sign, take it back with you, take a second for a neighbor if you'd like, or your business. We are ordering more. So we actually are going to be getting more in this week because the demand has been so strong, and we're so delighted to see that. And so we'll let the council know when we have those coming in later this week so that we can replenish and add to our branding across the community. Grover Beach, We Got This. Hashtag GB Together.
Very good. Thank you for that update. So great. So unless there's any other items that people want to share, we'll consider this update received and filed. And as the city manager indicated, this is an opportunity during the agenda for him to provide update on the city's response, the county's response. And so until further notice, it's anticipated we will have an update on future agendas until the situation changes and the need for updates is no longer there. So that does conclude our business items for this evening. So I will go ahead and see and reach out to Ms. Sims and see if anyone has called in for our second round of public communications, where if you are out there and do feel the desire to provide public comment on any item that's not on the agenda, then please call 805-321-6639 And I'll see Ms. Sims if anyone has called in.
No, we have no callers.
Very good. Thank you for that. I will go ahead and close public communications then and bring it back to council committee for reports. Let's turn to Councilmember Lance. Any committee reports that you wanted to share?
I attended the Grover Beach Steering Committee meeting last week. And it was primarily an update just from City Manager Bronson and just from the chambers of what they've been doing, what kind of events they're hosting for the local business community. We did get an update on the results from the initial results from the Grover Beach business survey. I don't know if Mr. Bronson wants to speak to those a little bit in his city manager's update a little bit, but fairly good feedback. There was, I believe they're still open for some last minute feedback. So as long as that's still open, I encourage local businesses to go to the South County Chamber's website to access that survey.
Very good. Thank you. Next, we'll go to Councilmember Shaw, see if you had any committee assignments.
I just had one meeting with HSOC. We did it was a subcommittee meeting to talk about funds called the PLHA funds. They come through CDBG. So actually, they don't come to Grover because we apply for CDBG on our own. But just to give an idea, you know, we've had at different times $500,000 for homeless services, and the rest of the county will be splitting up $872,000. So it again just kind of reaffirmed that us going and applying for CDBG on our own was the right way to go. And so it was really just looking at how we'll prioritize that $800-some thousand, and 60% of it will go toward housing, with a very large chunk going to the housing trust fund, because how they can leverage funds and make so much more housing than really any other agency with their leverage. And then with some of the money going to case management, et cetera. But all people in the homeless service, I won't call it an industry, but in that area are saying that they're expecting funds to be coming now to help deal with COVID. And so some of that can hopefully also be able to go toward case management. So more to come on that. But that was, you know, we're doing a League of Cities call every week for the Channel Counties Division. And just kind of talking about, since we can't meet, what are things that people in the Channel Counties could use? And we're thinking of doing like a series of Zoom calls that are just pertinent to our division. So if anyone has ideas of something they would like to know about, you know, something you may have wanted to learn about at a dinner, but now we'll learn about on a Zoom call, let me know, because we're just kind of putting ideas together. So that's it.
Very good. Thank you. Next, we'll go to Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. I had no meetings.
Okay. Very good. We'll try one more time with Councilmember Nichols. And we'll come back to me. And I did have one meeting just of the Five Cities Fire Authority. Significant items on the regular agenda. We did have several closed session items, of which there were no reportable actions that came out of those items. My other meetings are early next month. So with that, we'll close council committee reports. Miriam, I think, just gave a League of California Cities update as well. So we'll go in council communications, and we'll start with Councilmember Lance, see if there's anything she wanted to share.
Nothing to share, thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Shaw.
No, I haven't had much communication with anyone, except for the people I live with. But, you know, I appreciate what everyone's doing, and it's for me, it's getting harder and harder. So just thank you to everyone that's keeping up with this, and it was good to see everyone, even if it was just on here.
Exactly. Great to see everybody. So question for you, Miriam, is how is core math?
Oh, well, luckily my BB wants me to have nothing to do with her homework because I'll just mess up the fifth grade math. So okay. I can still handle the second grader.
Nice.
But yes, nice. Definitely of all the people we talked about, new appreciation for teachers as well. So
okay. Very good. Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
None that I haven't already discussed, so thank you.
Very good. And I'm in the same situation, so I've had opportunities to share communications and share what's kind of occurring at the county level. There is opportunities for each of us to be seen, and I encourage you to take the opportunity to be out in the community as we all have. But it is great to see everybody's face that I haven't seen in a month, and participation here. So, and I'll ask one last time, Councilmember Nichols. Hearing no comments, we'll go ahead and turn it over to the city manager for his report and comments. Mr. Bronson.
Thank you. Just a few other last items. One, building on Councilmember Lance's comments regarding the Chamber Business Survey, we did see the preliminary results of that last Friday, but the survey is still available. The council will see the final results on May 18th. And the preliminary take is that there are some good scores for the city and how we're helping businesses and in the ability to expand. And certainly we want to help businesses as best we can. So we'll talk more about that on May 18th. And also, just to close and just to tell the community once more, our community has been wonderful adhering to all these orders, staying the course for just a little bit longer. We know it's difficult. We know it's tough for all of us. We know our businesses are suffering, but staying the course for just a little bit longer is vital to make sure we continue to flatten this curve. Reopening is just around the corner. It will be here soon in a phased way, but for now, we all need to just stay the course, continue the good work we're doing, and we will continue to beat this virus once and for all. And then on that note, just a reminder to take a picture with your yard sign, tag it to hashtag GBTogether so that we can get those all over social media, and also hug a tree. Hug a tree in your yard, hug a tree in your backyard, and post it to GB Hug a Tree Challenge for Virtual Arbor Day. Let's flood social media with these positive posts. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for those comments. And then we'll turn it over to the ever much more somber city attorney reports and comments and see if he has anything to share.
Nothing this evening, Mayor.
Okay. Thank you very much. With that, I see that we don't have any closed session this evening. And so unless there is... anything that anybody wants to share before the close of the meeting, we will look forward to talking to you between now and April 20th and seeing you again on April 20th at today is April 20th. Sorry. So May 4th is our next meeting. So we'll look forward to everybody being safe out there. Be kind to each other, and we are adjourned. Thanks, everybody.
Hi.
Bye.